And now, live from the studios of Freedom's Phoenix, Ernest Hancock.
Believe me when I say we have a difficult time ahead of us. But if we are to be prepared for it, we must first shed our fear of it. I stand here without fear because I remember. I remember that I am here not because of the path that lies before me, but because of the path that lies behind me. I remember that for 100 years we have fought these machines. And after a century of war, I remember that which matters most. We are still here!
Here on Declare Your Independence, me, Ernest Hancock. Hello. For those of you watching video, black shirt, chartreuse tie. This is how I know what chartreuse the color is. I had no idea. I don't know. I had to wiki it up, man. You know, a friend of mine, his daughter's getting married and doing the wedding thing. We needed to have black and chartreuse. Okay, so then I knew what it was. Now, a couple years ago, Greg Tivenin's daughter, Rachel, got married. I performed the ceremony. You know, it was just very nice. And, you know, and I had to have a black shirt, chartreuse tie. It's kind of like a, it's green, kind of. It's a, like a lime green kind of thing, chartreuse. I have no idea. So Donna says, you should wear your chartreuse tie. Okay. So this is what you got it. Now, we had the wedding this, we hadn't gone over that yet. I definitely want to show some of the pictures. We'll do that probably next week or something when we get more time. We got a magazine this week. But my niece, you know, I gave her away, and that was a very fun time. You know, have all the family there, got some great pictures, everybody laughing and having fun, and got some video we just loaded and so on. That's what we've been doing. I'll tell you what we got for us, Joe, and I'll tell you a little bit more about what we're doing here with some of the equipment. We have Ian Freeman on in the second hour from LRN, FTL, Free Talk Live, owner of Liberty Radio Network. He is .fm, LRN.fm network we're on, because they had a case called the Robin Hood case where, you know, they were putting coins in parking meters and so on. But there were other stuff they did, and we don't like the way you do it and how you look and disorderly whatever and charges. And anyway, they not guilty. So we're going to find out everything from Ian on that. In the third hour, Ivan Elin from the Independent Institute. You know, Ivan, history and Ivan, the reason, you know, it's time to check in with Ivan, he's talking about, you know, the deal or non-deal, or kind of, you know, the pretense of we kind of almost sort of created a blue ribbon panel over the 6 months to talk about maybe doing a deal with Iran. And Ivan worked in Washington, D.C. for many years. He was there at the congressional level working and staff and doing behind the scenes and how, So he knows some, you know, the players and who's doing what and how the machine really works. He has an opinion on various things, but I'm really more interested in the machinery, you know, who's doing what and why. And so, you know, it's time to check in with Ivan. He just did a piece on the treaty and so on, or what they're working on. So it's time to get caught up on Iran. You know, I just, you know, 3 weeks. They broke into my rerun of Lady Gaga on Saturday Night Live. You know, they announced that they got some kind of no Iran deal on Saturday night. Kind of, you know, I'm like, what? You know, I'm just doing, when I prefer Lady Gaga on Saturday Night Live over Obama, then you know that, you know, he's got issues, okay? I'm like, seriously? So, you know, she's a better entertainer. Oh, yeah, she's going to be singing in space. Yeah, she's got one of the tickets on Spaceship too. She's going to go be first singer in space. La, 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 in space. You know, and you know however much it costs, she's going to get, you know, way more worth in publicity, you know, for going to space. I mean, this is, you know, we ain't in space yet. Oh, SpaceX just launched a geosynchronous orbit satellite a couple days ago. Here we go. And Jeff Bezos from Amazon, you know, they're talking about his drone going all over the place. I'm going, yeah. What happens when I need, a sluice box for my mine that's up in the middle of the nothing and I can't get in with kind of the spaceship? That he has a vertical takeoff land space. There was a series. Donna, look that up. It was Salvage Andy Griffith. Okay. It was I can't remember the name of the series. It was in the 70s, and it was Andy Griffith TV series about space salvage. He had like a, if you can get a graphic for that, you know, I'd like to put that, that'd be cool. Because what it was is that he had a rocket. He was an old salvage guy, and he just built this rocket with a fuel that was, powerful fuel that he'd go up, and they went to the moon. They go, hey, man, we're salvaging the Eagle, the lander. Anybody want it? eBay, you know, and then the government bought it all. They said, no. All right, so this is assuming we went to the moon. I mean, you know, there's so many people. We didn't go to the moon, and I'm going. You know, nothing surprises me anymore. And we went, we didn't went, but I probably think we probably went. You know, but it doesn't matter because in my lifetime, I'm pretty sure we're going to find out. We're going to go and say hello. So we'll say so maybe it's getting close enough. Maybe the government's, they're pushing to put some pieces up there if we didn't. So this is when they do a delivery, they're talking about the drone delivery within 30 minutes. He can deliver anything. I don't know, 78% of their packages are under 5 pounds. So, you just put it on a drone and boom, it drops off at your front door and comes back. No health insurance. You know, you want to know why things are getting all automated, robotized, and all that kind of stuff. We're going to be like, an iRobot. You got, the FedEx guy is a robot. He says, hello. I mean, what's the difference? You have a drone come up and it'll say, hello. And you got somebody behind a monitor back, doing whatever. Up, delivery, boom. You go, here it is, knock, knock, knock. Drone goes up on your door. Boom, bam, bam, bam. And you come out. Salvage One. Yeah, there it is. Yeah, just look up Andy Griffith Salvage One on a Google image, and it'll come up. Now, it was interesting in that it's just like what's coming now. I mean, if human beings can think of it, here it comes. Just like they're starting to find, quantum linking, blah, 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 between wormholes and black holes between the two and going across and galaxy and stuff. And I'm going, okay. There is, it's got to the point where Stephen Hawking, I just happened to come across a video. I was watching one of the others, and then you have all these other videos that come up on YouTube and so on. And one of them was Stephen Hawking's rocket ship that uses, an ion propulsion or so. It takes 6 years to get up to 90-something percent light speed. Now, it's at full thrust for 6 years, and you finally get up to light speed. When you get up to about half light speed, three-quarter light speed, you start half in time, for every hour past, 2 hours past outside of, the spaceship. So you get up to, speed of light pretty soon, you can go all the way to the edge of the galaxy in 80 years, from the time that's spent, in the ship. And I'm going, wow, that's pretty – why? Now we got to fix the crap we got going on here first, so we're going to talk about that. The other thing that's going on, Ian Freeman from Free Talk Live and LRN.FM Network, is I talked with the people over at the Daily Paul Radio yesterday, and we've been working on how we're going to sync up their clock with our clock and which hours and how they're broadcasting, kind of blah, blah, blah. But bottom line is this. We're working it up to where we'll be – I already sent them a bunch of shows, and they're going to start broadcasting on Daily Paul Radio. And they go, well, how does Ian think about that? Is there exclusivity? And I'm going, are you kidding me? It's all about the message, baby. We're going to do it. So we're going to be over there, too, and we'll work it out on the time clock and so on. And they'll be able to pull any of the podcast. Andrew Clark is already, doing it. So it's the Liberty content is going to be spread on just more and more outlets. You know, Peter Schiff, Thomas Woods will be, you know, have all of us over on, you know, one place. Then what?
Uncovering the secrets and exposing the lies. That's what the readers of FreedomsPhoenix.com get every day. FreedomsPhoenix.com constantly providing the information, the real news about government policies, and the real relationship we all have with the coercive government. The real condition of the economy, innovations in technology, breakthroughs in energy, health, and computer science. Learn the truth well before it's admitted to in the lamestream media. The corporate media, nothing more than distributors of government propaganda, but now there's an alternative. FreedomsPhoenix.com. Constant news updates on the issues that affect your life in the most important ways. With liberty and property under constant attack, FreedomsPhoenix.com provides the understanding behind the propaganda, and it encourages the participation of its readers. Go to FreedomsPhoenix.com. That's Freedoms with an S, Phoenix.com. FreedomsPhoenix.com. The revolution between the ears has already happened. Rhodes, it's the Ernest Hancock Show. Where we're going, there aren't any roads.
Okay, checking the news on, you know, I hate doing this during the show, but when I don't have a guest, you know, we'll go ahead and go over some of the news on Freedom's Phoenix, because, I mean, damn. You know, there's just so much stuff. And I could spend forever on each one of these. Let's go ahead and let me pull up some of these here so we can talk about. There's a Kentucky police chief that is, wants his pay in Bitcoin. He's like, just pay me in Bitcoin. What happened was, the story behind this is that they were making fun of how small the town was and something else was going on in Stephen Colbert and the Colbert Report on Comedy Central, and they got a lot of attention, and all of a sudden, you know, people are like, yeah, you're so poor, and, you know, here we're donate some playground equipment for the city, and we'll do a little this, a little that. And for some reason, you know, he thought he'd get them attention, and they wanted to keep some focus on and do and whatever, and he thought it was a good idea. Heard about it from his kid. The police chief says, hey, pay me in Bitcoin. Take out for taxes, of course, and everything. And then whatever's left over, pay me in Bitcoin. So, got a lot of attention. Excuse me. So I go, all right, you know, whatever. Let's see. Oh, a government chemist tampered with 40,000 cases, locking countless innocent Americans in prison. And they're going to review the case, and we'll kind of look at, maybe we might kind of sort of let you. I mean, you know, this is, you know, when we talk to Mark Victor, you know, see if we can schedule Mark again. Go ahead and call. He does a radio show once a week on a internet podcast service that he, they have a nice station here. You go down and you get your, you know, Vanity Radio. And he does really good shows. He gets some, you know, good guests. I mean, you look at his list, go to attorneyforfreedom.com, and you'll see his radio show up there. And he got some good guests and, you know, did a good job. So that's always fun. You got the boys. I mean, you got a radio show, you can almost get anybody to get behind the mic with you. You know, Sheriff Arpaio, County Attorney Bill Montgomery, John McAfee. You know, I mean, it's just, you know, he's got some, you know, great stuff. And oh, yeah, get McAfee's number from him, too. He said he'd give it to me, Slackivist. Okay, so we'll go ahead and we'll work that out. But what he did is he's taking time off. He's going, I got to go on a hiatus. I need time. I can't be doing, you know, I got to focus now because the Baseline Killer trial is coming up. You know, I think it's February. And that is going to be, man, that is international. Oh, my goodness. One, it's a perfect case to talk about. And it's just this kind of chemist thing all over again. I mean, it's just who tested what and how and the incompetence of. And a lot of times people die or they get put in jail for, you know, when they're not guilty. So he was saying, yeah, so you got time to test all that green leafy substance, do you? Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. It's like, you know, you call Arizona, it was, I don't know if it is now, but it was, probably is, you know, number one in auto theft. Number one. We're number one. We're number one. I first started doing radio in 03, and I go, you know, do I got to run for sheriff? I mean, I'll run for shit, so I could be number two. We're number two. We'll go down. No, we'll get it taken care of. We'll go and put the posse on it. We're going to find it. We'll be number two. I mean, I was making a big deal out of it. And all of a sudden, they got, you know, real serious about it. And they were thinking, you know, Sheriff Arpaio, he's been calling me. Already, I wouldn't do that if I was you. You know, I'm going, look, man. And what made me think of it was Howard Stern, when he was on in New York. He threatened in the mid-90s, God, it was like 94, around in there, that he was going to run for governor. And his only thing was, is he goes, we will fix the potholes at night. He goes, why are we, you know, messing up traffic in New York City, no less, and they're always fixing and tearing up the streets and everything during the day? You know, can't we fix these potholes and do all this stuff and do some construction and everything at night? Can't we do especially in good weather? You know, can't we? He goes, that's my platform. I'm running for, I think it was governor, you know, and it became a big deal, you know, and they were going after him, poo-pooing, you know, what a bad candidate he would be. I go, seriously? He wrote a book. Heck, most congressmen hadn't even read one. You know, so I'm just going, right. So we're going to go ahead and, you know, we kind of had some more favorable view of him running, and that's a long internal story. But what it did is it gave me the concept of, you know, all you got to do is have one good popular issue that people can vent on. And I'm going, look, we're number one in auto theft. How about we go for number two? What the heck? That'd be my platform. And it started catching on, and they were, oh, damn it. So then they took care of, you know, some of the auto theft stuff. During the process of this, you know, Mark, we've known each other a long time. His was, you know, where the allocation of resources were in law enforcement. If you called for auto theft and you said, they go, you know, we'll do the report over the phone. You know, so you can, we'll give you a report number so you can give the insurance and the insurance take care of it, insurance. And we go, that's your answer. That's it. You know, I go, oh, but I smelled marijuana. I, you know, I think they were out there. They were smoking a joint. I saw a bulge in their pants. The outline, it looked like a glass of paraphernalia for smoking marijuana. And boom, here comes the helicopters. It's just, you go, wow, what the heck is going on? It's allocation of funds. It's social and economic engineering with the tax code and the money and the federal government kind of, and this is what's important to us. It's going to be the same as, you know, I mean, you almost hate to even say it, you know, Nazi Germany, okay, where you were incentivized to turn in your neighbor. They got a garden of growing tomatoes in their front yard. So I know these people, you call them lawn Nazis, man. I mean, you know, the neighborhood zoning enforcement of the homeowner association of I got a badge, you know, on a clipboard. And this is going, there are plenty of these people out there, and it's going to get bad. And when you got incompetence on the other side of whether if they test anything or not, they just say, yeah, guilty. Now, what do you want it to be? Dead, done. So what's one of the other stories up here? Oh, we got to find this one. This is going to be good. Now, this, I 3D printed an AR-15 assault rifle, and it shoots great. Yeah, this is all over for the gun thing. You know, they'll do. We'll get to the story that I want. 2 million more passwords for Facebook, Google, Twitter, and other sites stolen. Yeah, of course. You know, I'm so shocked. Let's see. The real reason Hawks are trying to kill the deal with Iran. Now, this is why what Ivan Elon wrote and why we're going to have him on today. So we'll leave that one up there. People are buying a lot of silver and gold with their Bitcoins. Yes, they are. You know, yes, they are, especially when it's this low. I called Tim Fry over at Roberts & Roberts, and I go, do you still, because I like dimes, okay? I really do. You know, the silver dimes are small denominations. They're recognizable. They know how much. They're durable. They're 90% silver. You take that into account when you weigh them. It's 90%. They're how was it? 0.07159 kind of ounces, whatever. So I'm going, this is the silver calculator. We have that developed, and you can make use of it and trade with it. And I like you. I said, yeah, I might have a little bit, you know, next week, you know, I have a little bit of money. I can buy, you got, yes, I do. I go, good. Roberts going to hook me up. So Bitcoin buying gold and silver, yeah. Why not? But if I want to move money, I'd be doing it in Bitcoin. Now, let's see. Hugh Henry, Bitcoin could go to 1 million, and I wish it would. We'll get to the story I want to talk to when we come back. I got time.
What's up next? Visit the Liberty Radio Network program guide to find out at shows.lrn.fm. That's shows.lrn.fm.
It's time for Declare Your Independence with Ernest Hancock. To be a part of the show, call 602-264-2800.
It's time to put down that fish wrap, freshen up your coffee, and tune in to Declare Your Independence with Ernest. Yeah, that used to be my opening back in the day. Yeah, over 10 years ago, I started doing this. Damn. But I like my opening with Morpheus. We're not afraid. You know, that was done by a board op that was one of the production guys at one of the radio stations I was at. And he took that and I said, you know, can you do something with this and everything? And I like that. And, kind of mix, and he did that. And I go, oh, that's my new favorite. That's my new favorite. We'll use some of the other openings sometime just for nostalgia. Okay. This is what I wanted to go over on the news here. Let me pull this up. This is it. Now, this is good. This is good. This is good. This is good. Don't post your videos of police shootings in Dallas, Texas, until at least 72 hours after recording. Okay. Now, this is what's going on. There was a, I guess it was Dallas, officer, there was video that was being taken from home surveillance cameras that put it all on tape. There was a mentally challenged guy in his own driveway. He's just standing there, and an officer came up and you know, boom, 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 just shot him right on camera. Just straight jump. Now, of course, their recalling of the incident was different than the videotape. I'm so shocked. So what happened was they come out and they say, well, yeah, he you know, came after me with chainsaw or whatever the heck, you know. And, you know, he had a lance and sword and armed and he looked like a gladiator and he was going to whip my butt and I killed him. So when you look at the video, it's like, I don't think so. So what did the police do? They're like, you know, we don't want our officers given any kind of statement or test or anything for 72 hours. We want to see and wait and see what they put up on YouTube, you know. And after 72 hours, you know, then we'll put it up. Really? Well, they want 72 hours to check to see if anybody had anything and surveil and go through and comb in the house and make sure there's nothing of we can whip your butt and there's no evidence otherwise. So what do they suggest to the activists? Don't post your stuff for 72 hours. You got something on these people? You hold it for 72 hours. I understand the point, but that's where you start getting in trouble. I mean, you got to go hide for 72 hours or something. As soon as you know it, when you know it, you put it up because you know it and whatever, you just get her done. Because the 72-hour delay in statement by officers on what they just laid waste, the reasoning is what? I mean, it's nothing good. You know, it's not like your recollection's better. You know, it's not like, you know, it's nothing good. So this kind of stuff, you would think it would be isolated. It's just everywhere all the time. It's an attitude. I'll tell you where we really saw it happening is when they started doing billboards for becoming a police officer. I think it was about the late 90s. And you had people coming in from Gulf War I and Kosovo, and there was a heavy hiring of those that had prior military experience of kicking in the doors. And they got that adrenaline kind of high rush thing. It's not that they, you know, it's like we just had yesterday, the Sheriff's Department in California, they had of the 200-something people that they hired, is a high percentage of them were fired or disciplined from previous law enforcement work, but they got a job there because it was the minimum job requirement. It's a minimum job requirement. Minimum job requirement. And, you know, here you started having, well, they got the, you know, was it the gang task forces or something like that, and they're hiring guys from the gangs. Now, it used to be if you even had a tattoo, you didn't get hired. Now it's like a requirement, okay? So you're going, okay. So this is, and then we started, it was in the mid-90s, Vince Soprenowitz, you know, a libertarian columnist, newspaper editor, he did an article, explaining about this case. Now, this is before the internet, man. This was a good case, you know, that definitely would have, you know, went stupid on the internet. A gentleman was trying to, he wanted to be a good doobie. Now get a job at, I think it was Connecticut. He wanted to be a state policeman, you know, highway patrol or whatever they have there. So he goes in, he says, you know, here's my application. Yeah, I take the testing. Look how smart I am. You know, I've taken these classes. I'm good. I'm qualified and kind of give me a job. They give it to some other people that he knew that gone in. He's like, you gave it to Bubba? And not, all right, no, I just need to know what the deal is. We don't have to. You know, okay, so I sue. So he sues under the, I don't know, employment equal whatever the heck, you know. And he goes in, he says, I need to know why I wasn't hired, and I want to know, and this is what they came back with. Because you were too smart. And they go, what? Yeah. If you have an intelligence above a certain IQ or do too well on the test, then we find that you are not suited to carry out your orders. They don't want critical thinking. They want a trigger puller. So I understand. And how do you get these kinds of people? Well, you put these kinds of people in charge. The police chiefs that we just go, you want to know how it works? You go to Quartzsite. It'll be a little baby Quartzsite. And you can see exactly how an entire department is run, you know, from one police chief that they just, you know, got rid of. They paid out his contract. It's so bad. Just go. Here's your money. Go. So this is, you know, it's the police chief. It's in the justice system. You got that municipal judge, you know, or whatever court system that goes through. You got the town manager, the guy administrates and runs and directs and thou shouts. And you got the, police judge, police chief, the, and the county, city attorney. So you have the prosecutor, you have the judge that, you know, helps prosecute. You have the guy that went to get him and pulled him in chains to be prosecuted, and the guy directing it all. So I'm just going, this is writ large and everything. You want to know how it works? That's how it works. Now, they may have, you know, the tie straighter, or they, you know, got the good-looking guy with hair combed right and so on to be the spokesperson or whatever, but it comes down to that. So, yeah, it's just, you know, sooner or later, it all comes unraveled. All right. So, 72 hours in Dallas, you wait to post your stuff. Okay, now, I've seen this before, and it keeps coming back. This one woman, I'm just a mom, and she went on about the NDAA and the participation in her local community of them doing it, and she just, you know, went off on them. But the thing that got me is from the very beginning, they give her kudos for her patience as she waited to speak, to be recorded, to do the town hall, made her position known and have something to say about this issue as she waited there for 8 hours to speak. They know what she's going to say. They know who she's met with. They know what the issues are. 8 hours. I've been through this. You know, I haven't done that 8-hour thing, but long enough, you know, hours, you know, that we're just, no, we don't play that game anymore. This is how it works. When there's an issue, they'll go and you go, okay, we're going to get to have some kind of decisions already made. You know, legislation, it's already done, deal done. It's just window dressing. We're going to have, you know, kind of a meeting and such. So they get up a little town hall or it's a council meeting or something. You'll see it's at last on the agenda or it's not even on or whatever. And then you go, okay, they said they're going to talk about it. They got on the agenda. We're going to talk about it. All right. Well, they drag out the other kind of, you know, the bunting, how much they're going to put for Christmas on the street lights and, you know, and whose sidewalk needs to have a handicap access, you know, and to put in the cut and kind, you know, and they drag it out and they put, no matter what the reason, there's a room full of people, that reason, it's last, okay? So they'll get their guys up and they'll have their 1 to 3 guys up there and going, oh yeah, we got to have this thing. Anybody that's against it? You're last, and usually they wait until the media leaves. You know, they got to go write their stuff, do their broadcast, whatever. Then you come up. If then. It happens all the time. Governments don't work. I want my money back!
Freedom Summit 2014, February, in beautiful Phoenix, Arizona. Since 2001, the Freedom Summit has annually featured many rising stars of the Liberty Movement before they were proven right. The 2014 Freedom Summit has been crafted to provide a glimpse of the future and how best to position your family as we transition away from authoritarianism to a voluntarist society. Freedom Summit 2014's partial speaker list includes anti-police state columnist Will Grigg and anarchist Larkin Rose. They are Saturday night's dinner double feature. Other Freedom Summit presenters include co-host of Ron Paul's America and New York Times bestselling author Charles Goyette, Independent Institute's Anthony Gregory, Richard Grove from Tragedy and Hope, international columnist Paul Rosenberg, criminal defense attorney Mark J. Victor, and 3D gun printer Cody Wilson, and that's just half the list. See the full list at freedomsummit.com. The Freedom Summit, where the great minds of the modern freedom movement have been coming together since 2001.
Thanks to Bitcoin, LRN.FM is able to provide our free-to-air satellite channel across North and Central America. You can listen to LRN.FM 24/7 via satellite for no monthly cost. Learn more about our satellite channel at sat.lrn.fm. And if you'd like to help us continue to expand, you can send us Bitcoins via the address you'll find under the Bitcoin graphic in the right column of LRN.FM. To learn more about Bitcoin, visit weusecoins.com. That's weusecoins.com.
Freedom is the answer. What's the question?
I want to break free.
You're listening to Ernest Hancock.
I want to break free. I want to break free from your lies. You're so self-satisfied. I don't need
Boston Tea Party. We're going to have a Boston Tea Party this Saturday, have the Crossroads of the West gun show, the small arms review, big, you know, they say small arms. What it really means is that the 50 caliber on the back of your Jeep. They call it small arms, you know, 20 millimeter, you know, Gatling guns or whatever. They have a, you know, just a display of, these kind of firearms. You know, I don't even know what you call them. Well, they have, you know, reenacted World War II stuff, you know, a lot of it, you know, little artillery things or anti-aircraft stuff. And they got, you know, legal, they're all permitted and everything, you know, and they put them on review at the Crossroads of the West gun show in the December show. Now, the owner of the show, Bob Templeton, we've been working with, doing the graphic for the ad today. We'll get that up today, that we're having what happened was Mark Victor gives a speech a couple of times over the weekend there. He'll set up a booth and he'll go up and answer all these legal questions and such. And that's gone over real well. And Bob's known us from our gypsy booth that we've done from SAFE, Second Amendment is for Everyone, and the Libertarian Party here and everything. We're always, he's given us at the entry here, you know, put up your 10 by 10, which reminds me, Donna, we need to get another 10 by 10 got blown over and busted over the fish pond. So we need to get one for the gun show this Saturday. So we'll go to, we'll have some guys there for that while we do the Breakfast Club, and then we'll head over there and they'll have that up and we do some speeches. And he said, we need to get some people. And so we came, you know, names that we go back and forth on, you know, that he wanted to, you know, like even Boston. Nah, he didn't want, you know, so much a gun thing or even a preparedness or survival. He didn't want it to be, he wanted more of a free speech kind of, you know, just information news kind of stuff. So he wanted to mix the First Amendment with the Second. It's like the Second Amendment protecting the First. And I go, gotcha. So we hooked up federal judge Buttrick. John Buttrick is going to be speaking on arbitration, mediation, the future, is there going to be law and how and it does and with gun issues and how you might and negotiate and neighbor kind of stuff. So he's doing that. Mark will be speaking. It'll be interesting. But so that we get enough of our Boston, you know, we're going to go ahead and have a party here. He's going to stay here. We'll give him, you know, he flies his own little airplane. And he's going to land in Deer Valley, you know, Friday. I'll just give him a car and go, man. And go visit with his friends and down the gun show and do his thing and hang out here and do it and be good. And then Saturday night, we're going to have his party. Because, you know, a lot of the guys, wow, you know Boston? And they're just, you know, they're enthralled with, it's amazing how many people have read his book, Boston's Gun Bible. Because you want to know anything about any gun? Well, there it is. You know, that's, you know, let's see, that's on page. So there's a lot of young people that, you know, their grandfathers or fathers given that, you want to know about guns here, and then they, you know, got a favorite. So that is going to be, we're going to make sure all the guys that wanted to, you know, say, yo, what's up, hang with Boston, and he'd enjoy it. He'd just chill. Matter of fact, he wasn't going to go this year. That's why we put it up, and then we took it down, because I thought he was going to be here, and I said something to Donna, and she just put it like, whoa, you need to check with Boston first. And he goes, hey, man, I'm glad you're having a party with me. Am I invited? And I said, look, she put it up a little early before I called you. But he was going to fly back to Wyoming. He's in Colorado now. He's going to fly back to Wyoming. And he goes, yeah, I can come down there, you know, seeing as how you're going to put me up. So he's coming down Saturday night. We're going to hang. So any of you guys want to come by, meet Boston, ask a question, talk and chit-chat, you know, I'm sure there's some LEOs out there that want to come by. You're welcome. You just come on by and say hello. So we're going to be doing that. Now, I'll what some of the other stuff I had up here I wanted to do. I know one of them was Snowden and Greenwald, the men who leaked the secrets. And it talks about when Snowden first contacted Greenwald, he wanted to communicate with him using PGP, pretty good protection, encrypted emails. And Greenwald is like, what? And how you, what? So he had to walk him through this. So he talks about how he started to get, you know, it's amazing that he didn't do it before. He was so open in his communication. Of course, he was being watched and so on. So I'm looking forward to doing that. All right. Rand Paul offers freedom zones to save bankrupt Detroit. All right, cool. You know, where do you think it's going to come? You know, freedom will, you know, rise from the ashes of, you know, so let's see how Rand's going to do it. I'm just, okay, so let's go talk about it. Kentucky Senator Rand Paul this week is traveling to Detroit, the nation's economic disaster zone, to lay out a sweeping proposal to revive the Motor City while also extending his recent outreach to blacks by opening a GOP African-American engagement office. What the hell does race have to do with this? You know, I mean, seriously, I mean, here's a good opportunity to not... you know, is it overcompensation for the criticism of being racist? His dad, I got an African-American engagement office. You know, it's just not going to ring true, you know, with the GOP doing this thing anyway. So I don't see that as a good strategy. I think just going, you know, people are poor, people are hurting, people, it's an economic thing. Here's an opportunity to not bring race into it. That's just GOP rulers on high elite thinking. Paul, a 2016 GOP presidential frontrunner, will be in Detroit on Friday to address the Detroit Economic Club, where he will unveil a plan to create economic freedom zones, a unique agenda that features hope to poor families and struggling businesses. In what could be a cornerstone of Paul's economic agenda for troubled cities and regions, he will detail his Detroit economic plan to revitalize the city's economy with growth and encourage tax and regulation changes, not eliminations. Eliminate. I don't want it. You know, why leave it in place? Yeah. His trip makes him the first to offer a blueprint to restore Detroit's lost luster and comes during a week in which a federal bankruptcy judge gave the city unprecedented powers to take virtually any move to do whatever. All right, key to Paul's plan. Providing eligible areas, okay, so now we got limited areas, with a reduction in individual and corporate income tax to a single flat 5% rate. It's how you're going to be taxed. All right. Reducing the payroll tax, not eliminating it. Providing child education tax credits to parents, better than not, I guess. Suspending EPA non-attainment designations in economic freedom zone areas, which I don't even know what that means. Probably should find out. Suspend Davis-Bacon wage requirements on federal projects. But see, it still acknowledges there's federal projects. You know, this is. I don't think this is going to... I mean, what does it matter what I say? I'm a Phoenix. I'm a little know-nothing, kind of just the, you know, nobody. You know, so anything, it's always like you get blamed when stuff happens. They go, it was that guy, and they started in the trend of, and guy said and did and made it, you know, whatever, stick in the mud. And I go, look, I'm glad, you know, people put all that kind of emphasis on some of us individuals that, like, we have some big, giant whatever, but we don't, okay? But I'm just going to tell you what, in my opinion, is going to happen. You know, the supporters of his father, Ron, are not, this is not what this is for. And I give you a perfect example. This last weekend, the father of the groom, my niece got married, had a great time. The father of her husband, nice guy, commodities guy, investment whatever in Little Rock, Arkansas, you know, hangs, you know, lived next door to Clinton's mom, you know, well, his, you know, his lake cabin, and you know, had Secret Service staying in his house before and seeing Bill and, you know, what's up, and, you know, had not too many kind words about Hillary, and Chelsea used to swim with his kids, and, you know, and I got the, you know, from that side, and great stories. Okay, now his whole thing, his perspective on, he's going, yeah, you know, this libertarian thing, you know, I've been checking up on you, and, you know, kind of looking there, wow, you know, it's kind of, yeah, you know, talk about and this and that. And we got, and I try to keep it light, and, you know, you don't want a deluge him, but his cortex was a little raw. So he's like, yeah, I'm going to check out and see and kind of, you know, it's, you know, thanks, you know, this is information. And it was, and I really, really, really liked him. I mean, he's just such a nice guy. And what does he do? Yeah, I'm starting to see, you know, that's Rand Paul. Rand Paul, yeah, he's really starting to move up. You know, it's Rand Paul's got a good thing, Rand Paul. And that is the perception that they have of the movement is kind of, from outside, is that the movement is, you know, kind of going, and Rand Paul represents it. And, I mean, I don't know, you know, I'm not one to go around busting everybody's bubble on different stuff and everything, you know, but my opinion is, I'm going, look, the people that supported his father are not necessarily the foot soldiers on the front, you know, tip of the spear kicking ass for Rand. And this proves it. You know, it's a whole nother agenda for a whole nother crowd. You know, it's pandering to, you know, races and certain issues and inside the system. There's no effort really to abolish or abandon the system that did this. It's just tinkering around the edges. And I don't think that's going to be very inspirational to a lot of people. We'll see. I'm sure we'll be talking about it.
More Declare Your Independence is coming up next, live after the news, here on the Liberty Radio Network, LRN.FM.
Can you go to jail for dropping money? Hey, everybody, welcome to Peace News Now, your daily journal of peaceful resistance. I'm Derek J. Today's Wednesday, December 4th, 2013. 1 ounce of silver is $20. 1 Bitcoin is $1,100. This episode is brought to you by friends of WeUseCoins.com. You've probably been hearing a lot about Bitcoin on the news. If you'd like to learn more about how you can use this new currency, I recommend you visit WeUseCoins.com. It's the perfect launching pad to get started. That's WeUseCoins.com. A man was charged with a crime this week for letting $1,000 in cash fall from the top floor of the Mall of America. He said that after a bad divorce that left him with very little, even the loss of his pet cat, he just wanted to spread some holiday cheer. The police arrested the man, and he's now facing charges of disorderly conduct, a crime which includes jail time. In other news, a man in Tennessee has proven that a deadly firearm can be created with only the items purchased from retail stores in airport terminals. Evan Booth, a computer programmer, created the gun using items like a hairdryer, lithium batteries, and body spray. The gun successfully fired pocket change through sheetrock. Evan said he decided to embark on this project after the TSA introduced the naked body scanners, which he believes violate travelers' privacy. Evan made several other deadly weapons, including a crossbow, blowgun, and spiked club, all made from using common items purchased in airport stores. No amount of airport security will prevent bad people from doing bad things. Speaking of bad people, Harry Reid, one of Obamacare's architects and staunchest supporters in Congress, is now exempting some of his staff from having to buy insurance through the law's new exchanges. Reid's spokesperson said, quote, "We're just following the law," which is true. The people who wrote the law for everybody else also wrote themselves the power to be exempt. I'm sure you non-politician Americans who just lost your insurance will feel comforted to know that Reid's staff gets to keep their government plan that you pay for. Speaking of people you pay for, a cop in Florida was caught pleasuring himself sexually in front of a woman at a gas station and was allowed to resign without facing criminal charges, so he'll likely become a cop somewhere else. Anybody else would have been charged, convicted, and forced to register as a sex offender for life. But cops are different. They can do crimes, and that's okay, because you're not going to do anything about it. In other news, the Tony Award-winning Broadway musical Kinky Boots was featured during the Macy's Thanksgiving Day Parade, and then promptly bashed by stuffy prudes who called the show inappropriate for featuring men singing and dancing in women's clothing. In response, the show's producer and lead actors headed right to Macy's in full costume to go shopping. They shared photos from their Black Friday outing on Twitter. Winning! In other peaceful resistance news, activists are working to turn off the water to the NSA's billion-dollar data collection center in Utah and its other facilities around the country. The spy agency's Achilles heel is its dependence on local utilities. Using a state's right to nullification, activists are asking lawmakers to propose legislation that will end the relationship between the NSA and state resources. For example, you know how the NSA's supercomputers are collecting data about everything you do online? They rely on more than 1 million gallons of water per day to cool those supercomputers down. Without it, they'd melt. Do you want to make that happen, peacefully and lawfully, by cutting off their supply? Learn more today at offnow.org. Stay tuned to Peace News Now for all the latest updates on the ongoing peaceful evolution.
And now, live from the studios of Freedom's Phoenix, Ernest Hancock.
Believe me when I say we have a difficult time ahead of us. But if we are to be prepared for it, we must first shed our fear of it. I stand here without fear because I remember. I remember that I am here not because of the path that lies before me, but because of the path that lies behind me. I remember that for 100 years we have fought these machines. And after a century of war, I remember that which matters most. We are still here!
Yeah, but we're late. Ian Freeman is rushing his way back to the studio. He wants to come on, do it, and, you know, from the studio, and he's doing that. All right. So hopefully by the next break, the next segment, we'll have Ian Freeman on talking about the Robin Hooding in Keene. So this is, you know, we've been following this case for a while, and I'd like to get him to give us a summary. Is he on? Is that him? Button, push, go. All right. Ian, tardy, slacker. All right. Go ahead and tell us, you know, the Robin Hooding event, what started it, and get, we'll build up and come back in the next segment and get, you know, kind of your dismissal or your win on this thing, everything. But let's go ahead and give the whole audience the story on Robin Hooding. Go.
Sure. Well, good morning, Ernie. I apologize. I was out doing outreach at court this morning and totally lost track of my schedule. Anyway. So Robin Hooding started back in 2009, actually, with an early mover here in New Hampshire, the Free State Project, named Lauren Canario. She got it. She got the idea together of going around and saving people from getting parking tickets in downtown Keene, because here we still have the, you know, the kind of the old school parking meters where you put coins in them. And obviously they've got the fancy new ones in the bigger cities. So she would rescue somebody from getting a ticket by finding an expired meter before the meter maid could reach it, and she would place a coin in the meter and then leave a note on the car to inform the person that they would have received a ticket had it not been for the efforts of Robin Hood and the Merry Men. So that's kind of how it got started. Other activists over the years have sort of picked up that ball and run with it, and then earlier in 2013, the very beginning of the year, a new mover in 2012, James Cleveland, he got interested in Robin Hooding, and he kind of took it to the next level. He got together a crew of several Robin Hooders and kind of brought a new level of organization to it. It used to just be something that people kind of did when they felt like it, and James took it to the next level by making it basically an everyday activity of folks going out, hitting the streets in downtown Keene, finding the parking enforcement agents, walking in front of that person, and then saving cars from getting tickets and leaving a little calling card, a very nice-looking business card with a picture of Robin Hood on the front, and then on the back it says something to the effect of, your meter expired, but we saved you from the King's Terrace. And then, you know, give contact information there as to how people can send contributions in.
Okay, so the ticket would have been how much?
$5.
Okay, so it's a $5 ticket, and they will spend $5 billion trying to stop you from stopping their revenue of $5, right?
Yes, they spent quite a bit of money suing us in local superior courts. They actually hired private attorneys because the city attorney couldn't hack it, so they brought in some hotshot private attorneys and paid them a boatload of taxpayer dollars.
Okay, now how long has this been going on? It's been a year or more, hasn't it?
Well, Robin Hooding has been going on in earnest with this daily, you know, people are on the streets daily saving thousands of cars from getting tickets this year. That's been going on at that level for about a year, just under a year at this. Well, yeah, I guess about a year at this point. And then, but before that, like I said, it started back in 2009. It just wasn't as well organized as it is today.
Yeah, we launched the, it was really to bring attention to wallet voting. You know, the silver dimes and all that kind of stuff. Donna will put up in this hour's segment, 4409's video of us doing this very thing. And I tell you where we got the idea from. It was in mid-'80s in Wilkes-Barre, Pennsylvania, down the square. We would put coupons on for a restaurant. And it would have, I used to manage Domino's Pizza back in the expansion of that. So I met Donna at Penn State. And we opened up a store in Wilkes-Barre, and we went up there and we said, you know what? We'll go ahead and just give, here's a coupon, for so much off on a whatever, and we put money in your parking meter. And then somebody called us and they said, you don't have to do that. During the holidays, between Thanksgiving and New Year's, they don't charge for parking downtown. And I go, huh. Oh, okay. But it was a good idea anyway.
Yeah, sure.
So you kind of do that. And then we started up here with a bunch of putting nickels in. And we talked to them because we knew there could be a problem. They were arresting people in Southern California for doing this. And yeah. We talked to the police department, and the video has, with the police meter man, they're laughing, having, yeah, it's all good. Because we always talk, hey, nobody's got to die over feeding a parking meter, okay? Don't just let it go. If it would have become a regular money-sucking campaign like you had, they may have changed their attitude. At what point did it start to where it became a thing? I mean, were you antagonizing them? I mean, were you, in their face? Or was it just a revenue thing? I mean, what got them to where all of a sudden they're motivated to go after you for costing them $5?
Yeah, good question. So the city's initial lawsuit that they filed back in May, they were pretty upset about it pretty quickly. Obviously, they had to work on putting the suit together, and so they finally filed it in early May. And the original suit was demanding an injunction be placed that would ban us from being within 30 or 50 feet of the parking enforcer and also prevent us from talking to them and prevent us from recording video of them. Just a total blanket, unconstitutional prohibition on being the free media and free speech. So they were pretty desperate, and they were also basically libeling and slandering us by claiming that we were harassing and threatening and intimidating their parking enforcers to the point that one of them claimed they were having heart palpitations. And there's all kinds of just ridiculous claims on their part, but part of the reason why they made those things up was because they want us to look bad. I mean, they know that that Robin Hooding is very, very popular among the people in Keene, because who the hell wants to get who likes getting parking tickets?
And it gives government agents heart attacks if you feed parking meters.
apparently, well, they were claiming it was the harassment. They claimed that we're, you know, saying awful things to them and trying to get them to quit their jobs, just being generally nasty to them, when in fact the truth of the matter is that it usually was the other way around, that the parking enforcers, a couple of them, there were three of them, and two of them were had a tendency to be pretty nasty. So they were lying about that. They had no evidence of it. They, you know, we went to three full days of court hearings where the city presented their case, and they never presented any kind of case to show any evidence that there was any harassment going on. And it was always my contention that if there were ever any harassment going on, they would have arrested somebody for it and charged them with criminal harassment. But they never did that because they had no case. So basically, they were just trying to destroy our reputation.
Well, in the case, was there anything they asked that you can't feed the meters? I mean, it was all everything around that, but they didn't actually say, and you can't put nickels in the meter.
No, they can't do that because in New Hampshire, that's not illegal. A lot of bigger cities in other places in the country, it is illegal to feed someone else's meter. However, I'm sure the city of Keene would like to pass an ordinance like that, but from what I understand, they can't do it based on the way the system is set up here. They would basically have to have a state law passed to outlaw it statewide, which makes it very difficult to achieve something like that here in New Hampshire, because we have a very large citizen legislature to the tune of 400 state reps.
Ah, this is interesting that they would approach it this way. You know, when we come back, there's a bunch of other stuff Ian and I got to get caught up on, and hopefully he'll be back in the studio, and we'll get them all nice and pretty, silky tones. We'll be right back here on Declare Your Independence with me, Ernest Hancock, another independence declaring kind of guy, Ian. Freedom Summit 2014, this February in beautiful Phoenix, Arizona. This summit has been crafted to provide a glimpse of the future and how best to position yourself and your loved ones as we transition away from authoritarianism to a voluntarist society. Don't be surprised. Be informed, be entertained, and network with Generation Next, the inheritors of the future that are already creating the infrastructure of tomorrow today. Details at freedomsummit.com.
Shiny badges on your jacket. Shiny badges start a conversation with your neighbor or your doctor or your family or your school. Now there's teachers and lawyers and business executives, and they all wear shiny badges and they all reject the stink. Shiny badges on your jacket. Shiny badges show the world that you reject coercion and aggression and oppression by the state. Shinybadges.com.
To be a part of the show, call 602-264-2800, 602-264-2800, and now, Ernest Hancock.
Welcome back to the Declare. Arizona, with Ian Freeman from Keene, New Hampshire. Well, he's doing some Robin Hood. And this is, I mean, it's such a simple, easy, goodwill kind of idea. And I'm wondering if the man, you know, was upset a little bit. Yep. To the point that they did all kinds of investigation, lawsuit, going into court and, you know, wasting everybody's time. You know, that's one thing that's interesting. I mean, I would imagine that, you know, the support that you got from the people kind of outweighed, but I'm still interested in, you know, how this went over PR-wise with the people. What was the rhetoric that was in, like, the local newspaper and the local radio and the local, they're going, oh, those evil people are giving heart attacks to meter maids. I mean, I'm wondering how they spun this. What was their best effort, and what did they get out of their effort?
All right. So, Ernie, just to give you a heads up, anybody who really wants to know about this can go to freekeen.com and scroll back to May of this year, and you can get a real feel for how the media was reporting it. Outside of Keene, the news was all over the place. I mean, it went international. We were on Good Morning America, Fox News, MSNBC. I think The Telegraph picked up the story. There was foreign language publications that picked it up. I mean, this story went everywhere about the city going after Good Samaritans. It was great for headlines. Locally, the spin was definitely different. The local newspaper is certainly in the pocket of the city, and they're very interested in protecting the city and the state. So their perspective was more deferential to what the city bureaucrats were claiming, which was that, oh, those Robin Hooders, they're harassing and intimidating and threatening the meter maids. They're awful people. And so they were definitely more willing to buy what the city bureaucrats were claiming about us, which, of course, was complete fabrication.
Well, what were they claiming? I mean, it's just you're beating up meter maids or something. I mean, you know, I don't, you know, and I know how some of the activists, they'll you know, nah, that's another one. You know, they're kind of antagonizing a little bit sometimes. You know, I'm just kind of, you know, at what level does a bureaucrat have to put up with, you know, heck, the tolerating their even being there? I mean, you know, it's just, I wonder what the, at the case, you know, the adjudication of this, the judge, did they put any kind of limits or standards, or you're not allowed to, you know, kick them in the shins or something? I mean, did they say anything?
Well, obviously you would not be allowed to assault someone, but no, there's no problem with speaking with government bureaucrats, and that's ultimately all the Robin Hooders were doing. I mean, when you're walking around for 2 hours, you know, walking in the same path as that other person, you're going to likely want to have a conversation at some point with them. And some of them didn't like the conversations that were being had. They didn't like the, you know, the kind of the root striking questions that we might be asking, or some of the observations we might make, you know, comparing their job to thieving or stealing from people, or extortion, threatening peaceful people and pointing out that they're hurting people and all of that. That could make someone very uncomfortable if they found out that their job that they might have taken because they like to walk, or that they like to get the exercise or whatever, is actually a job that hurts people. You know, you could understand why that would create some cognitive dissonance and create some uncomfortable feelings in people. But one of the rules was interesting, Ernie. When they filed the original case, we got to look at the job description for the parking enforcers, because they included that in their court filing. And actually, in the job description, it says that they're supposed to endure mental and verbal abuse by members of the public. That's one of their job descriptors. Now, I'm not saying that's what the Robin Hooders were doing. I've never done that, and I've never seen any other Robin Hooder do it. And most Robin Hooders are usually recording video at all times, and we upload all that uncut, unedited video to the Freeman TV Raw channel on YouTube. So anyone who wants to can literally pour over hundreds of hours of recordings and, you know, try their best to find these supposed examples of harassment, intimidation, and threatening, and they're not going to find them because they don't exist.
Okay. So their description of minimum job requirement is to put up with a little bit of a, you know, unhappy individuals getting ticketed.
Verbal and mental abuse is the exact wording from I mean, that's pretty serious.
That came up in the trial, of course.
Of course, that was brought up, yeah.
Mm-hmm. And what was the response? People went, oh, I mean, I'm wondering what, because I would imagine under Cross, they had some of the meter maids or whatever on the stand, right?
Oh, yes.
And then they cross-examine, they say, in your job description, does it not say, and they go, yeah, but, I mean, what was their response?
Well, they had no case, Ernie. I mean, they had no case whatsoever. They basically were, you know, just blustering and intimidating and spending taxpayer dollars to try to put a stop to it. They hoped that they would find a judge who would side with them in this case. You know, and you never know. The judge might have sided with them, but in this case, the judge made the right decision and took the motion to dismiss that our attorney made and granted that, and then dismissed the other case because they actually filed a second lawsuit against us. So remember, the first lawsuit was to prohibit us from being near the parking enforcement agents. They failed on that lawsuit. And then the second suit was filed in September. So the initial one filed in May. They filed the second one in September before the first one was even heard completely in court. And the second suit basically said that they wanted damages. They were then going after us for money, which was funny because in the first suit, they had claimed, and they told this to the media, it's not about the revenue. It's about protecting our employees. Our employees are being harassed, and we're really concerned for them. This is what it's about. It's not about the fact that we've not been able to write 5,000 tickets this year because of the Robin Hooders. No, it has nothing to do with the lost revenue because, by the way, the average ticket, even though it starts at $5, a lot of people don't send it in fast enough, so it goes up. You know, over time, it goes up. So the average ticket that people pay is actually a $10 ticket, and we know for a fact that by the time the first trial came about, by the time the first lawsuit came about, so about halfway through the year, that the Robin Hooders had saved 5,000 motorists from getting tickets. So, you know, you do the math, that's $50,000 that the city did not get to collect from the good people of Keene and the surrounding areas. that they kept in their pockets. And so obviously this was something that they wanted to – this was obviously about the money.
Okay,
and so finally
the
in the second lawsuit, they admitted it.
Okay, now the one thing, though, is I, you know, initially when they say about the money, or I was thinking more like punitive or, you know, pain and suffering, or you caught – you know, they're actually, you know, just freaking city revenue.
Well, they named a few things. They named the revenue that was hit. They named that they had to give counseling sessions to the parking enforcers. They named that they had to spend money trying to hire somebody because one of the parking enforcers quit, by the way. They quit their job over this. And actually, he's now working in a productive job where he delivers oxygen tanks to sick people. So, so yeah, they're down, actually. They're probably going to be looking to hire a new parking enforcer. And so they named a several – oh, and attorney's fees, of course, which you know, they wanted to get out of us as well. So that case was also dismissed. So both of the cases were dismissed.
I don't think they understand the position. You know, what's the mentality that would bring this – I mean, the best thing was just let it go. I mean, you know, wait till you get tired and you kind of did your, yeah, whatever, and peace, and I'll go over here, and they just go to another street or, you know, whatever. I don't see, it's a mentality. See, that's why I keep saying we're up against a philosophy. You know, we're up against a way of thinking of you're not licking enough boot, you know? And if you're not licking enough boot, they got a place they want to put the boot. They want the left jack boot or the right jack boot or the jack boot on your throat party to tell you what you in for. And will they get you somewhere else? Are they gonna make sure you understand that it was them? And they will punish. We'll see.
This is Donna Hancock with Brangus Realty in Arizona. Now more than ever, we have to seek out good investments to help secure our future. The real estate market across the country today seems to have recovered. Inventories are low, housing prices have gone up over the past year, and money is available to lend. But you must be careful to read between the lines of what the mainstream news is reporting. There is a shadow inventory, and the market is manipulated by a multiple number of factors. And we will need to anticipate this flux and prepare for the next market downturn in housing. There are many communities across the country today that have a growing mindset of preparing to ride out the financial storm. And Arizona is one of those places. If you are interested in moving to the desert southwest, where we have 3 to 4 growing seasons a year, and the sun is readily available for anything solar, I will be here to help you when that time comes. Feel free to use my webpage at donnahancock.com to search for Arizona properties that are of interest to you. And please, feel free to call me at 602-828-1819 to discuss options for your move to Arizona.
You're listening to the best liberty-oriented audio streamed around the clock, on the air, and online. This is the Liberty Radio Network at LRN.FM.
It's time for Declare Your Independence with Ernest Hancock.
Here in Phoenix, Arizona, from the BEA T-Full Studios of Freedoms with an S, freedomsphoenix.com. And we have Ian Freeman from Free Talk Live. We're here, Mark. You'll do it up nationally on 100 gazillion stations, okay? And they run free, LRN.FM radio, which we're going to be talking about some other feeds going from that and doing different stuff, and they have them broadcasting across the planet, and the satellite thing. Satellite. We're going to talk about the satellite here in a little bit. But, you know, the one question that I have, carry over from the previous segment, is, okay, you win, but they got guns. And they got zone enforcement guys, and they got neighborhood whatever the heck, and they got shiny badges and judges and cops and, you know, and kind of stuff. You know, so is there any threat of some retaliation in another way or some place or something they're going to whatever? Or are you worried about it, Ian? What's going to happen?
No, I'm not worried about it. I mean, they're going to do what they're going to do. They obviously, you know, I've been a target for a long time here because I'm fairly visible. I go out, I do a lot of activism. The city people absolutely know me. The police know me by name. I mean, they've targeted me before. They'll likely come up with some other reason to target me again, and that's fine. I totally understand that. That's part of of what I do. It's part of the role that I've taken in this activist community, and it is what it is. I mean, they're violent, and they use the threat of violence to get their way. And when they don't get their way, they stamp their feet and they get more violent. And you know, they haven't figured it out yet, Ernie. We've been trying to teach them this lesson over and over again that when you mess with activists and you mess with peaceful people, there's going to be consequences, peaceful consequences, of course, but consequences nonetheless. And we've tried to teach them this lesson, but they don't learn it. Even though they've been smacked down in this case by the judge who's upheld our right to free speech over the government parking enforcement agency, they'll come up with something else. They're not going to give up. All they know is violence. All they know is threats. And so they'll come up with something.
Okay, what judge from where? Was he municipal city judge? Was it a state?
Superior Court. So Superior Court was where this took place.
Okay. Have you been before this judge before on various things?
He's somewhat new, but yes, liberty activists have been before him. He's the same judge who sentenced Rich Paul to a year in jail on selling cannabis. So, you know, he's not a liberty guy or anything like that, but he's better than the previous judge that was in his position. The previous judge in his position was threatening people in the courtroom with arrest for wearing a Ron Paul t-shirt, he almost arrested Mark, my co-host, with his son there because his son wasn't quieting down fast enough or they weren't leaving fast enough. There's all kinds of just ridiculous behavior on the part of these judges. But in this case, you know, the broken clock strikes right a couple times a day, and we got one on this day.
Well, is there going to be a are they starting to bend to you a little bit, starting to be a little bit better and even-handed justice, or is justice even a word anymore? Are they just, you know, we'll get them, and they're sitting there wringing their hands at the water fountain, and we're going to get us some? I mean, I'm wondering, you know, are you building up goodwill with anyone? I mean, is there a next generation of peace officers that might come in as opposed to this law enforcement type? I mean, I just want to know what you're building there in Keene. Is it an example to the world, or is it building something there for the people to live more comfortable? I mean, what is your goal?
Well, my goal is to bring as many liberty-loving people to New Hampshire as possible. I want to create the most exciting movement and the most exciting destination for people who love liberty, because the fact is, where I come from, at least in Florida, there are people who love liberty, but there just aren't enough of them. There's not enough of a concentration. They don't have any effect whatsoever on the area in which they live. Here in New Hampshire, Ernie, we've got, of course, the Free State Project, which is the reason I moved here in the first place. Your listeners can go to freestateproject.org to learn more about it. But the idea is to bring 20,000 liberty-loving people together to the same place and then get active. And when I say same place, I mean New Hampshire, in general, not just Keene. Keene is one of several possible destinations. But, and then to concentrate that activism here. We've already, at this early point in the game, because we haven't even reached the 20,000 yet, but some people have moved early, hundreds of people have moved early. Even with just the early movers we've had, one state representative who is not a friend of freedom has said publicly that they believe that the Free Staters are the single greatest threat to the state. Now, to me, that is a huge endorsement. That is a huge statement of how successful we've been so far, and we're only just getting started. You've never heard anyone in the history of the Libertarian Party say that about the Libertarians. They're saying it about liberty-minded people here. Liberty people are getting elected as Republicans and Democrats in New Hampshire. We've got amazing civil disobedience, outreach projects that are just unprecedented. There's media here that's also unprecedented. There's no more exciting liberty movement than what's happening here in New Hampshire, and that's the goal of this, is to create something that people look at who love liberty and say, wow, there's really something happening there here in New Hampshire, and there ain't jack happening here where I live. I have got to get to New Hampshire. I've got to join the Free State Project and get active so we can actually have a chance at liberty in our lifetime. Because if you stay where you are, where it's the same 10 guys going to the Libertarian Party meeting once a month or once a week or whatever and bitching about the government but not doing anything, then you need a change.
Well, maybe we can get more people to know about what you're doing, which segues into our next point, Daily Paul Radio. They're working with wanting to hook up, and I talked to him yesterday. They're going to try and get their SAM broadcaster set up to take the wheel that you have on the commercial breaks and the news and everything for LRN to start bringing. Angel Clark is already working with them. I'm working with them. They want to get you guys on there. And so I'm going, you know what? another opportunity to spread the word to more people. But I tell you, the one thing that I brought up in the last hour, there's a gentleman lives in Little Rock, Arkansas, you know, heavy kind of, you know, he's a wealthy individual that the father of my niece getting married's husband, and we've known him for years, and he's, you know, kind of, you know, hangs with the Clintons kind of deal. And he gets the impression, yeah, you know, this libertarian freedom, they had starting to rise up, because Obamacare has pissed off everybody. Anybody that's got a business, I don't care if you got R or D after your name, Obamacare has pissed off a lot of people. I mean, more than I anticipated. This was, man, the damn. Well, what happened was, is he equated Rand Paul with the Lovelution kind of thing. It's kind of like he's of the opinion, and they're being told to expect this, and it's kind of the feeling that they're getting, is that the Lovelution that supported Ron Paul, his father, is kind of expected to buoy up Rand. And I'm wondering what your opinion on that is.
Well, I am certainly not a fan of Rand Paul. I mean, yeah, he's probably better than most other senators, but that's still like comparing cancers and saying you've got the best form of cancer. The guy does not seem to be a principled, liberty-oriented person. He doesn't claim to be libertarian. He doesn't really seem to have liberty-oriented positions on a lot of different issues. So I really don't spend much time thinking about the guy.
Yeah, that's kind of the position I'm in. I'm just, I don't want to go out and be, you know, stick in the mud and, you know, be negative. But I just, I don't think I'm going to get all excited. You know, I'm like still voting. I mean, you know, it's not about that. But the one thing that interested me is we talked about it a little bit. I want to get your opinion. Is he's going to Detroit and going, we're going to have a freedom zone. So we're going to do this, do that. And every one of them is, instead of eliminating certain things, just reduce this and waive that. And kind of, and then he opens up and, you know, African-American, black service kind of GOP, we love you too office. And I'm like, what? You know, I, the fact that they would even bring race into this kind of thing, I just seen that so counter to everything that we, I think that the Lovelution has accomplished. You know, his father was, you know, I don't understand what their reasoning is. It seems exactly what the gentleman from Arkansas was saying, is that they're packaging Rand as a traditional GOP kind of thing. But inside the party, you got this rift that's going on between, I don't know what, the Tea Partiers and, you know, Mitch McConnell types, you know, which is right out of Kentucky, too. And I'm going, there is something else going on at the fabric of America. You know, there, this whole foundational, what is, you know, the default position for Americans, individual human beings, and who represents that? You know, where are you getting that information from, that perspective? New media. It's just going to flood everything. All of a sudden, it's going to saturate like Bitcoin. We'll be right back.
James Babb, Davy Barker, John Bush, Catherine Bleich, John Buttrick, Tim Fry, Will Grigg, Charles Goyette, Anthony Gregory, Richard Grove, Ernest Hancock, Rosa Corey, Greg Peterson, Larkin Rose, Paul Rosenberg, Butler Schaefer, Frank Tamburi, Taryn Lupo, Mark Victor, Cody Wilson, all speakers at Freedom Summit 2014. Check it out, freedomsummit.com.
While our satellite channel is free to listen to, it's not free for us. You can help us cover our satellite costs with the chip-in on the right side of the page at lrn.fm.
Freedom's the answer. What's the question? You're listening to Ernest Hancock.
Paul. well, let's go ahead. Let's do that a little bit, because Rich Paul, you know, has been, God, it's been like almost a year. How long has he been in, Ian?
He's been in jail for several months. He was sentenced to a year in jail for selling cannabis to willing adults who wanted to buy it. And was facing 100 years in prison, got a year, so it could have been a lot worse. He is expected to get out probably in about a week or so, if all goes as well. Well, we don't have the exact date at this point, but it should be coming up very soon. And he's been having a tough time in there. He's got a problem with depression, and he was using cannabis to self-medicate. And obviously he can't access cannabis in jail. So it's going a little tougher for him than, let's say, when I was in jail. I don't struggle with depression. And, you know, for me, it was like, you know, no big deal being in there. But for him, you know, any amount of contact he can get from folks on the outside is really appreciated.
How long were you in?
I was in for 60 days a couple of years ago. Damn. For some civil disobedience.
Damn. Okay. So we have, if he gets out next week or so, how long will he have been in?
I don't recall offhand. I think he was sentenced back in April, so for the bulk of the year. And actually, he was in for a couple months before he was sentenced. So, I mean, he's been in for, you know, 8 months out of the year, basically.
Long enough. Okay. So, there was an account for him. He had his commissary account charged. He, you know, sent me some Bitcoin. Is he going to come out with first month's rent or something?
I don't know what exactly his plan is with rent. There is still a fundraiser going on. We've done a couple fundraisers. One was to get him money for an appeal to the Supreme Court. That was successful. We have brought an attorney on board to do that. There's another fundraiser which could be used for helping him when he gets out. If your listeners want to help him, they can go to richpaul.freetalklive.com. That's richpaul.freetalklive.com and contribute to the Legal Defense Fund. That will assist him further, because basically what he's doing, to give you a little summary, in New Hampshire, because of the Free State Project, we've had electoral success that has resulted in some bad laws being repealed and some good laws being put in place. And one of those good laws is that in New Hampshire, unlike the other 49 states, you can actually talk legally about jury nullification in a criminal case. So in most places, if you mention the terms jury nullification in court, you'll end up with a contempt of court charge. They'll call a mistrial and you'll get in big trouble. In New Hampshire, you can talk about jury nullification to the jury. You can speak about it during the trial. You can, you know, talk. It's not prohibited. It's, in fact, completely legal here. But what happened at the end of the trial was the judge in the case gave very biased jury instructions to the jury. The judge gave these instructions that basically said, you know, they didn't acknowledge the jury nullification effectively at all. And the judge said, you have to interpret the law as I explain it, and kept really focusing on, you must listen to me. I am the man in the robe. And basically intimidated the jurors into not really thinking jury nullification was an option. So the gist of Rich Paul's appeal is that he wasn't given a fair trial, given that jury nullification was an issue brought up during trial by both the defense and the prosecuting attorney, interestingly, and that the judge did not give appropriate instructions, and that he should have been more explicit about the jury's right to decide the law itself, which, of course, what jury nullification is. That's where you as a juror can vote not guilty, even if Rich got caught selling pot. If you think it should be legal, if you think the drug war is insane, you can still vote not guilty. And now you can do that anywhere in the United States. You just can't talk about it. You can't tell the other jurors what you're doing. The defense cannot explain jury nullification. But here in New Hampshire, we've got a completely different situation, which is one of the many reasons why liberty activists who actually want to have...
Whoops, sorry. I had a give me a second here. Put this. I was putting up the Katniss thing to talk about, and it was on the same channel. I apologize. The Fiji thing. What we're doing is James Babb is doing the billboard effort around the country.
Yeah. We've had James on the show. It's great stuff.
And what we decided to do, we're creating a crowdsource funding edition on the Freedoms Phoenix. And the problem that I have with a lot of these different things and the shopping carts and everything is so much of the percentage you have a successful thing. It's like up to double digits almost. You know, once you get past the credit card charge and the PayPal this and the banking whatever and the cut to the, you know, Kickstart and Indiegogo fund me whatever the hell, you know, all of a sudden you're working for somebody else, you know? And I'm going, no. So we're creating this, and the first project that we're going to have, along with some others that we'll launch, is Fiji. And I talked to, we've done billboards here in the Phoenix area before, And this has been my, you know, my spiel that I did right after the TARP when we did It's Not My Debt, you know, the babies, It's Not My Debt, and they did the TARP and so on, is that I knew that going into the next year, there wasn't going to be a renewal of a bunch of the advertising contracts of different people because the economy, I don't give a crap what they say, it's taking a dump. So So in 2009, we got, you know, 9 locations, big billboards for a ridiculously low amount on the freeway kind of thing. And I did the same thing yesterday talking to them. And I said, look, you know, let me tell you what I know. And we'll wait. You want to wait till the first week of January to do that? We'll wait. But let you know we're in and this is the deal that we want and the price we got and how much and this is what we want. And you're like, God, yeah, but I go, when you're ready, there's enough competition here, you let me know and we'll work out the deal. So we're going to start the fundraising for the Fiji doing billboards here in the Phoenix area. Now, what a lot of people don't know is that in Arizona, in the, it's about 93, there was legislation that was introduced by a state senator and it passed the Senate for Fiji, you know, people being informed. And the House freaked out and all the judges and prosecutors and policemen had a cow and it didn't pass in the House. But what did happen is we finally got a ruling from the Arizona State Supreme Court acknowledging, yes, you have the power, but we don't have to tell you.
Sure.
And we don't even have to let you tell them, you know. So I'm going, okay, so this is going, all this history, all this, you know, momentum, all this awareness that's already here in Arizona, we're going to do some ass whipping on this. And I think that we can take it more nationally. And then you have Ben Swan and his Just Us thing. And I've talked to a lot of the people that were in Chile when they announced this. And they're all, as individuals, on board with it's one of the final boxes that we have yet to check off. You know, because what do we have? We have the cartridge box and the ballot box and the soap box and the jury box. Well, we've, you know, the ballot box thing, I'm kind of done with that one. You know, I'm good. We've done, you know, soapbox. We got plenty of soapbox. You know, it's a new media coming. You know, we got our soapbox. You have cartridge box. You know, can we got them, but we're kind of, you know, can we not? You know, I'm just kind of hold that. You know, we'll make that the last resort. But you have to check off all the other boxes, and one of them is the jury box. So we do this, and we go, look, everybody just needs it. Heck, just 1/12 of the population needs to know. Heck, you know, just an encouragement of, hey, man, I registered to vote. You vote no. But I got on jury duty.
So yeah, I mean, you know, Ernie, I heard about this Just Us thing, and I, you know, while I support people getting out there and getting the message of jury nullification out, and I'm glad Jim Babb is putting up billboards and, you know, major cities and all that, you know, it's hard for me to really get too excited about it because I still feel like, to some extent, it's still activists spinning their wheels. You know, I'm sorry, but we just don't have the concentration. The average person is not likely to take up the mantle of being the lone juror to hold out and go and jury nullify. But if what you did was to get all the people who cared about jury nullification, or a bunch of them, to come to the same geographic location and concentrate their activism in one place, then what you'd end up seeing happen is that you'd be more likely to actually end up on a jury when you've got a concentration of activists in one area and everybody's registered to vote or has a driver's license, so they will be possibly picked for jury nullification. You'll start seeing activists getting chosen for jury nullification. Earlier this year here in New Hampshire, we had a landmark case where a gentleman was charged with felony manufacturing of marijuana for growing pot. And there was a Free State Project participant who was on his jury. She voted not guilty. She changed the entire jury over to not guilty and set this man free. It was a total jury nullification case that probably would not have happened if that Free State Project participant had not gotten on the jury. So it's great if liberty people are talking about jury nullification, if they're getting out there and, you know, reaching out. But if you really want to have a chance of getting on a jury, you've got to be in a geographic location where your numbers are high enough to where you're likely to be chosen. And the more people we have in New Hampshire, the more likely that becomes a possibility. So I hope people will join the Free State Project at freestateproject.org and get up here where they can actually make an impact.
That was a good segue for Ian. But then again, you know, there are other people that might, we'll just go ahead and do it anyway.
They should do it anyway, but good luck.
We already know where this goes, so we're going to go ahead and have some fun. But Ian, of course, is all about one thing: concentration of activists. You know, and we're keeping an eye on Keene to see what's actually happening. Hopefully, you know, we'll get to the point to where there's a respect of individual rights from the people with the badges.
And now,
Live from the studios of Freedom's Phoenix, Ernest Hancock.
Believe me when I say we have a difficult time ahead of us. But if we are to be prepared for it, we must first shed our fear of it. I stand here without fear because I remember. I remember that I am here not because of the path that lies before me, but because of the path that lies behind me. I remember that for 100 years we have fought these machines. And after a century of war, I remember that which matters most. We are still here!
No fear, no fear, no fear, no fear, no fear here on Declare Your Independence with me, Ernest Hancock, here in Phoenix, Arizona, from the BEAUT full studios of Freedoms with an S, freedomsphoenix.com. Ivan Elin's going to help us understand what's going on in all the stands over there. You know, Iran stand. You know, okay, let me tell you what my perspective is. I go in, I'm watching Saturday night, you know, I'm watching a rerun of Saturday Night Live or something. It was like a rerun before the extra Saturday Night Live. I guess they had an earlier one on. Lady Gaga. Lady Gaga just happened flipping. She's being entertaining. I'm like, I've never even seen Lady Gaga. Heard of whatever, and, you know, entertainment. Okay, she's doing pretty good. Boom! Goes to special breaking news. We got Obama up there is going to tell us. And what they do is the talking heads, they go, let me tell you what we're going to tell you. Obama gets up, he tells me. Then he said, you know what he said? Let me tell you what he said. I'm so feeling programmed. Next. Next. I don't care. Fast forward. You know, this is, I don't believe anything. They're opening their mouth. I don't try. Ivan Elin came out with something. Know what's the title of his thing? The real reason hawks are trying to kill the interim nuclear agreement with Iran. Well, who's Ivan? All right, let's do a little bio here, and you'll see why we want to talk to Ivan and see what he has to say. Senior fellow and director at the Center on Peace and Liberty at the Independent Institute, Dr. Elin is a graduate of Iowa State University, received an MBA in applied economics, better than not, PhD in national security policy from George Washington University. Who in the heck wants to do that? Well, he does, and what did it get him? He's been director of defense policy studies at the Cato Institute. He spent 15 years working for Congress on national security issues. Ew. Well, he certainly got a front row seat on that one, including stints as an investigator for the House Foreign Affairs Committee and principal defense analyst at the Congressional Budget Office. Wow. Author of the books Partitioning for Peace, An Exit Strategy for Iraq, and Carving Rushmore. That sounds interesting. Okay, so let's go ahead and go to Ivan. Welcome to the show, Mr. Ivan Elin. Thank you for coming on.
Thanks for having me on, Ernest.
Okay, now this is, you know, let's skip to the end. Let's go, who is against a nuclear agreement with Iran? And why are we even negotiating with those evil people that we think are evil for some reason? Or I don't know. You know, give me the playbook on this, because you've been there during the time. It's always been Iran. Iran has always been, Iran is not under our thumb. Iran doesn't have one of our central banks. Iran, we are going after Iran. Why, in your estimation?
Well, of course, this is one of the endless countries that we've gone after. Saddam Hussein in Iraq, Milosevic in Serbia, Gaddafi in Libya. And certainly these people are, dictators, and the Ayatollah in Iran is a dictator. But I think we need to separate people's internal politics from their foreign relations. And certainly Iran has interests in the Middle East, and it does sponsor certain groups that are opposed to Israel. But the problem is that with the United States really has no dog in that fight. And we think we do. We have a lot of groups that in the United States that like to bash Iran. And, of course, they always go back to the bad relations between the two countries, back to when they took our hostages for quite a while under Carter administration. But, of course, that was triggered by the U.S. coup in 1953, which reinstated the Shah and deposed the democratically elected leader for an autocratic
brutal dictator, the Shah.
Dictator. I mean, and, of course, Ron Paul pointed that out to Rudy Giuliani in the Republican debate, but Rudy Giuliani acted very surprised that there had been anything prior to the hostage crisis. So this hatred underneath the surface, at least among the people, has gone back quite a ways into the 50s. So, but the real thing is, Iran feels, whether you like their politics there or not, whether you think they're a dictator or not, they think they have a they live in a bad neighborhood, according to them. The Arab countries like Saudi Arabia, Qatar, they don't like Iran, and neither does Israel. So,
okay, but why do we have Israel and Saudi Arabia, you know, linking arms and holding hands against Iran? I mean, what's their interest that's so... If I'm a Saudi Arabian or anyone paying attention, and they start, you know, becoming buddies with Israel because they have a common enemy of Iran, I'm wondering what they're convincing the people on the street in Saudi Arabia. How is that acceptable? I mean, what is the threat of Iran to Saudi Arabia?
Well, of course, Iran is the great Shia power. It's Shia and Sunni are two different branches of Islam. And, of course, the Saudis lead the Sunni branch and the Iranians lead the Shia branch. And to a Christian or somebody else, there wouldn't be much difference between the two. But for people who are Islamic, there's a big difference. And we have a lot of conflict in other countries between the two groups, in Syria, in Iraq, in Lebanon. And so this is sort of a sectarian conflict that goes all the way across the region. But Iran is regarded as the leader of one branch of Islam, and Saudi Arabia is regarded as the leader of the other branch.
So, I mean, you know, why is that happening?
Well, it shouldn't be a problem, really, but people can get along. They have different religions.
But why don't they? What is the reason? See, to say, oh, well, yeah, but he's Democrat or black or gay or what. I mean, I don't see, certainly in foreign relations, how that makes there some other. I mean, is it like the Puritan view that somebody somewhere is like, you know, not us? I mean, I don't understand.
Well, I think that's part of it. You're right. There should be no logical reason why they couldn't get along, and the fact that they don't is irrational up to a certain point. But then you start talking about great power politics, so that's factored into it too, because Iran is getting more powerful, and of course, the U.S. invasion of Iraq took away Iran's foremost enemy, and now, of course, Iran has a lot of sway in Iraq, probably more than the United States does now that the U.S. forces are out of there. So the George Bush administration increased the power of Iran, and so everyone's nervous that Iran is growing more powerful, and the nuclear program is only one part of that. And I think Israel and Saudi Arabia would actually like to have the United States do their dirty work by attacking Iran, and that would, of course, weaken Iran as a regional player. So it's much more than just the nuclear program. We talk a lot about the nuclear program, but nobody really talks about trying to destabilize Iran or overthrow the government there or even just bomb it to make it more weak. So these countries are looking for a way to counter Iran.
Counter what? I mean, I don't get the impression that the nuclear capability is really the thing, because they're not really telling us the truth. You got to enrich it up to pretty high, you know, for them to be able to make a bomb. And I'm going, look, what, they don't have enough money? Heck, you buy them in bulk, you get a discount from the former Soviet republics. I mean, you know, you just kind of, you know, I'll go, you know what, you guys got, okay, cool, we'll buy that. Oh, and it comes with a battleship? Okay, fine. I mean, it's just on the black market. I'm just so shocked that they're BSing us into thinking that it's all about, you know, their capability for nuke. I mean, if they really wanted to do us harm and get into a shooting war with the United States, you know, they'll bring it on, and there's all kinds of, you know, easy ways to get in this country and do damage and harm. And why are we making them an enemy? Because it's not their capability, nuclear, to make the enemy. I mean, it's just the fact that they're an enemy. Why? When we come back, that's what I want to find out. I want to get to the point where there is something else behind this. What do we care? And I think the young people, Generation Next, don't. Freedom Summit 2014 will be held in Phoenix, Arizona from Friday, February 14th through Sunday, February 16th at the Sheraton Crescent Resort. Details at freedomsummit.com. The Freedom Summit, where the great minds of the modern freedom movement come together. Since 2001, the Freedom Summit has annually featured the best and the brightest minds detailing our current status of freedom. The Freedom Summit has featured many of the rising stars of the Liberty Movement before they were proven right. Our list of speakers are now well known to the Liberty Movement, and they accurately predicted what is now common knowledge to many of us. But now what? The 2014 Freedom Summit has been crafted to provide a glimpse of the future and how best to position yourself and your loved ones as we transition away from authoritarianism to a voluntarist society. We are now preparing for what comes next. Don't be surprised. Be informed, entertained, and network with Generation Next, the inheritors of the future that are already creating the infrastructure of tomorrow. Learn more at freedomsummit.com. Ivan, I'm going to need you to, you know, like really put the microphone up next to your mouth. You're like at the, I got you crank all the way up and I can hardly hear you.
Okay.
There you go. Yeah, it's a lot better. The one thing that it's really got me puzzled is I don't see, is when you had the campaign last year of I love Iran from Israel and I love Israel from Iran, and then it got turned into a big Facebook thing, everybody loves everybody. It's a generational thing, and there is the separation of old thoughts with the old people being old ways and old. And I'm going, okay, fine. So they'll use, you know, yeah, but they're Shia and they're Sunni and these guys now quit it and kind of whatever excuse, but it's just an excuse. There's something else. I mean, it's geopolitical power. China wants to have a cut investment in, and kind of we keep muscling them in out of Africa and doing this. That, you know. And there's, and China's yet to play their cash out card or something. There's something else going on at a higher level that has nothing to do with us. And the reason I'm thinking of you is because you know this. You're from and in Washington. You know, I mean, it's kind of, you know, I want to know the players, you know, who are the special interest guys that come in, thou shalt and we need and gotta, and they start beating the war drum and stuff. I mean, who are these people doing this to what end? Is it as simple as, you know, central banking or military industrial new world empire, we rule you people or what? Because this is lost on the young generation, and I can't explain it to them. I mean, there's no logic and reason on this. You got to help me out.
Yes, well, U.S. foreign policy is often domestic policy, so we have a lot of military-industrial complex. We have a lot of pro-Israeli lobbyists, et cetera. And also, I think we have oil companies that are on the side of the pro-Israel group because they support Saudi Arabia and the Gulf Arab states.
Okay, now this is the kind of stuff I need to the audience. You know, help me out because this is not – there is no logic. You start beating the whatever card, you know, they're evil. And then you start with the communication abilities now and translators and everything. Heck, we got Haria Phoenix. We got an Arabic language Facebook and Twitter for Freedom's Phoenix. We translate into 39 languages. I'm going, you know, I already know this is all bullshit. And I'm just, but I need to have, you know, a perspective from you having been there in the background of how this works and who are the powers and do they have the same power now that they did before and all that. So that's where I'm going to go with this. And I need you to help me. Would you please?
Okay.
All right. Here we go.
To be a part of the show, call 602-264-2800. 602-264-2800. And now, Ernest Hancock.
I just want to know. And who am I going to ask? Independent Institute's Ivan Ehlin. You know, he did write, and you know what? Why the Hawks really want to stop the Iranian deal. We got Saudi Arabia and Israel holding hands on, ooh, we're buddies now. We're going to go again them. And so, and I see all the players, You know, I mean, you get, you know, here comes Kissinger, you know, former presidents. Here comes, you know, old congressmen and senators going to tell us what Fur and, you know, and Fox News said. And I'm going, you know, all these reasons, all this stuff, all this, you know, war drum beating and stuff, and they're evil and got whatever problem that they in their they blood dripping from fangs and pointy horn and tailed and whatever BS they can come up with is lost on Generation Next. They're going, yeah, that's all very interesting, but you know, that's not what this report says, and that's not what that report says, and not what this guy I know from Iran says, and not this guy I'm communicating in real-time Google translating of a 15-year-old in Tahrir Square, you know, in Egypt says, and the guy in Tehran says. It's bypassing all this old media crap. So, Ivan Elin, Ben Washington, dealt with a special interest. The alignment with the pressure on congressmen to do what they're doing comes from where, Ivan? You got to yell into the microphone so I can hear you. But I'm telling you, you know, I need an understanding of the coalitions here in the United States that's trying to influence policy. And who are they? You know, what groups? What's the alignment? Lay the groundwork for me.
Well, first of all, Iran has almost no strong group representing it. There are a few minor groups, but there's almost nobody. On the other side, of course, we have supporting any sort of military and pushing for military action are the Israeli lobby, and that would include certain fundamentalist Christian groups as well as the American Jewish, well, I can't say the whole American Jewish community because there are other people like K Street who are more restrained. But there's both, you know, there's the pro-Israeli lobby and then there's the oil interests, which I think sometimes, you know, different interests from the Israeli lobby. But in this case, they're probably more in agreement because they support Saudi Arabia and the Gulf states, Gulf Arab states, who also don't like Iran. So I think that's probably and then, you know, of course, you have your military-industrial complex, which always likes to do military interventions because you have to replace ammunition, you have to replace, you know, parts that are broken down in combat, et cetera. So, you know, they support an interventionist foreign policy in general, and, of course, Iran is the next country on the list to be in the U.S. crosshairs.
Because, I mean, is there others? I mean, we got Dennis Rodman going to North Korea. I remember we had Iran and North Korea and, you know, Iraq, and then they changed it. It's always got to have three. Okay, we got to have three. Well, I guess we don't have Iraq anymore, at least not this week. Maybe a little Afghanistan. You know, Osama's gone. You know, they got to keep having three bad guys. And they're focusing on Iran. We got Dennis Rodman going to North Korea. We forget about them. And they got nuclear weapons. They go, yeah, you want nuclear weapons? We'll give you Polaroids. Here they are right here. What are we going to do about it? You see, I don't see the connect. There's no logic, you know, going at, I don't see it. And it gets to the point to where American foreign policy, it doesn't matter what it is. I don't care. They're just talking. You know, the Rambo. And then we get into Rand Paul. I had a gentleman, this last ass long story, but bottom line was Democrat, you know, hangs out and buds with, you know, Clinton kind of thing, you know, in Little Rock. And he's like, yeah, you know, Rand's starting to pull, yeah, that libertarian, yeah, it's getting to be. And they're giving the impression that Rand is going to get the same kind of support that his father did from the same people. I don't see it. Because when I'm looking at, you know, their policy towards Iran, he would say, let's not go to Syria because that would be, like, bad because I don't see any interest in U.S. interest involved. But if there was an interest, we go kick their butt, like with Iran. And I'm going, there's no consistent policy and foreign policy and how we deal with these people. I'm looking for the real reason. I mean, is there – I mean, give me – something. I mean, we give a crap about Iran because why? I don't understand. We're going to war, nuclear war. We got congressmen sitting there saying, yeah, we just nuke them.
Well, the U.S., I wrote a book called No War for Oil, and there's two interests that the U.S. has overriding interests, and you see them both here, and they both converge in this point, oil and Israel. And sometimes they don't agree, as I mentioned, but in this case, they do. I think the oil interests and the Israeli interests in the military-industrial complex, which of course is interested in money, But the other two groups, and of course the oil companies are ultimately interested in money, but I think they're also interested in U.S. Having a, you know, the more the U.S. military gets involved in the Middle East, the more leverage the oil companies have as well. And of course, the pro-Israeli lobby is, they consider Iran as the strongest country compared to Israel in the area, especially now that Iraq has been weakened by two U.S. wars. So that's what you really see, I think, are these factors, and oil and Israel always are in, you know, that's what drives U.S. policy. It's more domestic. U.S. doesn't have a foreign policy. It has many foreign policies, and they're all driven mainly by domestic interest groups.
Which means public, Israel.
The public choice theory, I think, works when you have a very interested lobbying group, and you have the public, which is more diffuse, the interest group always wins out because they can direct their efforts and their money to
okay, let me make it this statement, and you can see how far off I am. I am of the opinion that the only way that we're going to stop being at war with everyone and creating these wars and killing our own people and theirs and droning and all that kind of stuff is if the power is eliminated from the United States to do such things. Well, I don't know how else to do that other than a repudiation of the federal government to begin with. I mean, it's just kind of I break with thee, and the states or the individual just break with them in their mind. They become, you know, Katniss or something, catching fire. You know what? It's just, I break with y'all, and we're done. Well, that doesn't mean they go away, but it goes away in our minds. I see this whole evolution thing, this whole next generation thing, this immediate communication with the rest of the planet as that big, giant, humongous chasm, that revolution gap between what's promised by government, they're going to defend our rights and protect us and do all this kind of stuff, and what reality is. And you get that gap so far that it's not like a revolution of violence or a revolution everybody shows up in a V-mask. It's a revolution of, you know what, I don't give a crap what you say. I just don't care. Yeah, but we're getting Sante. Breaking news! Breaking news! Breaking news! We're going to... And you go, yeah, I'd rather watch Lady Gaga. Seriously. You know, and that's why I want to talk. Is there a break with government in general? Sure as heck, this tyrannical piece of crap we got in D.C. Is that where we're going? Ivan Neal, when we come back. And that's where we're going when we come back. This whole policy, talking about stuff, it's getting to where it's just lost. And the people in Washington, all of the representing the think tanks and everything, are they even paying attention to the people under 30? I mean, do they even care?
Well, now they care mainly about the people that have the political power, and of course, people under 30 don't, which is why you see them get soaked with the health care thing. They get soaked with the Social Security supporting all the older people, et cetera. So I think really they don't have any political power at all, or not much.
Okay, that's exactly what I want to talk about when we come back. We'll be back in about 3 minutes.
Okay.
Listen to LRN.FM on any phone, anytime, 213-493-0309. That's 213-493-0309.
There are those that just want to be left alone, and those that just won't leave them alone. Which one are you? The Ernest Hancock Show.
To me, Ernest Hancock. Let me tell you, this is a couple things I want to bring up. I mean, the power of the youth is what? We got any? Do their opinion matter? Does it make a difference? Does anybody care? They always hear, we need people to get engaged. We need to be more involved. We need more Indians for all of us chiefs to tell them what to do. And then they come out in droves in 08 and 12 and supported freedom and everything. They say, never mind. We don't want to talk to y'all. You go over there and pay. And they go, okay. Never freaking mind. We'll just wait. It's all good. We just wait for you to die off. This entire ideology, literally, people, they have to just go away. I understood this. As a young activist in early 90s, I'm just waiting. You know what? I just wait for you to die off.
Because this whole ideology is being supported and pushed by what? Is it industries, special interests, powerful individuals, secret handshake clubs, whatever? Don't care. Don't care. Because here we go. We look at, you know, should Iran be allowed to have nukes? I mean, you know, and is that our job? And what happens when you have a nuke? You know, they go, yep, got Polaroids right here in North Korea. We didn't go after North Korea, did we? And they go, yeah, and then they're firing them over Japan. And you said, seriously? I'm crazy. I'm crazy, which is kind of the idea that we tried to do with the Soviet Union with Ronnie Reagan. He's crazy. He's a cowboy. He might, you never know what he might do. You know, it's kind of, so, you know, North Korea is like, yeah, we crazy. And who do we have ambassador over here? Dennis Rodman. We're obviously crazy. So you go, all right, all right, all right, all right. Should the U.S. be allowed nukes? Well, how did they get that power to do that? They had to get it, you know, either they're of the people, by and for, and all that. So that means as an individual, do I have the right to a nuke? Well, then how the heck did the government get a right to it? And if I didn't delegate it to them, well, I must have had it. You know, so how about we just ban it for everybody and kind of be done with it? You know, see, that's not going to happen. And what if Iran agreed to total elimination of the nukes? Would it be over? That be it? Are we done? Are we done? You know, what happens when they give up their nukes? Like, you know, we're not going to do that. We're not going to pursue that. We're kind of like Gaddafi, boom, you wind up dead. So I'm just like, there is no evidence that any of this makes any sense. So I believe Generation Next is just, you know what? We're just waiting for all y'all to die off. But do the youth have any power now? Ivan, you know, help me out here. I mean, is there anything they can do, or do you just got to wait for everybody just to pass on?
Well, of course, the you know, you might have a point there, because young people don't have a lot of political power because they don't vote in the large numbers that older people do, and therefore they get the shaft on a lot of different things. The new healthcare law, they're just blatantly saying, well, we need a bunch of young people who use far less healthcare to come in and help us out with this. And of course, the young people are redistribution of wealth from the rich to the poor, because there are, of course, poor older people, but if you look at the income statistics, older people have more money because they simply have had more time to accumulate assets, and younger people haven't. So what you're really doing is you're transferring. Social Security really does the same thing, because we're going to have all these retirees. And in 10, 15 years, probably me being supported by the younger people, and that's really not right, since...
It's unsustainable.
Yes. It's not only unsustainable, but it's really...
They don't have it.
Well, the way Social Security was originally set up, you had many more workers per retiree, but of course the demographics have shifted because of the baby boom, and so we're going to have far fewer workers supporting.
It's wrong on principle. I mean, and the healthcare thing is a neon flashing perfect example of, we're going to put a gun to a young person's head, and we're going to make you pay for healthcare that you do not need. I mean, you know, that's a personal decision whether they need it or not, but they're not infirm. They're not unhealthy. They haven't, you know, destroyed their body with, you know, Kellogg's cornflakes enough yet. I mean, but, you know, gosh darn it, you're going to pay like you do. And then it's going to, and that goes up and up and up and up, and it transfers to them. It's unsustainable. As a philosophy, it is unsustainable. And every effort to try and make it kinder, gentler, you know, fascism, you know, I'm just going, this is not, it's unsustainable. So I don't know. You think a lot of people in Washington and the think tanks and so on, they're looking at the next election cycle. It's 14. It's 16. It's what? I'm sitting here looking at 16, 20, 24. It's 10 years from now. When my grandkids get to be of age, I'm looking at what kind of country we're going to have. And we're going down the wrong path. And you can't just tinker with it. You know, it's so irritating to me. And I don't advocate for it. The youth, I'm like, yeah, you know, you go vote in big numbers to what? I don't trust the system to begin with. I mean, what is it that you're advocating that's going to be a fix to this?
Well, I think really the problem that we have is that, unfortunately, the system that we have is the founders, when they created it, I think it was brilliant at the time, and I think it still is brilliant in certain respects, that a majority can't just oppress the minority. We have rights and that sort of thing. And it takes a while to get stuff through Congress, if it can get through at all. And the Congress is really supposed to, the senator is really supposed to kill things. And that's what it's been doing lately. Everyone's complaining about that, the fact, but that's what the founders originally, they wanted cooler heads to prevail.
What have they killed?
Well, they haven't passed anything is really what they've... You're right, they haven't killed anything. I misspoke. What they really haven't passed anything, but I think that's a good thing. They passed 56 laws, which is an all-time low, I think, or one, certainly a low number.
Oh, what the hell else? They got tens of thousands of pages of, you know, everything that they do from NDAA, you know, Patriot Act, the health care thing, well, and inside those bills, they got everything they want to do right there.
Those 56 laws were probably... too much, but it's right. I mean,
no, they don't need to pass anymore, Ivan. I'm
well,
going.
They do need to pass laws.
What?
The other ones that they passed is what
Amen.
They need to do. Yeah, but so an activist Congress wouldn't necessarily be bad if it were repealing a lot of the regulations.
No, we got an activist executive branch that has been given the power by the Congress, so they didn't have to pass
well,
anything.
That's right.
I mean, is there anything they can't do? We got rendition. Hell, we got assassination. We got drones coming here. This entire military industrial we built over somewhere else is going to your local little sheriff, police force fusion, multi-jurisdictional, we whip your ass group. I mean, it's over. There is no fixing this. I want to know how you think this is going to get fixed. We're going to have a United States federal government that's going to get fixed. What is your definition of fixed, and how is that going to happen? When are they going to be protecting my rights? How does that even happen?
Of course, the ideal thing would be for the government to retract, but the problem is we have a ratchet effect. When these laws get passed, then you can't. It's also difficult to pass the repeal of the law. So you don't really want to let a law get passed if you can possibly avoid it. But of course, interest groups get involved in this. You know, what you really have to do, unfortunately, is bring the public awareness up to such an extent that they would counteract some of these interest groups.
By ignoring them.
That's very hard to do because the public can only focus on a few issues at a time, and a lot of times they get distracted by the media version of the issue instead of what should be really be done. So I'm not really sure what we can do other than, you know, the people that are concerned about this keep bringing it up. I mean, I think we had the libertarian movement at least has had made inroads. Now it's certainly still small, but it's bigger than it was after Ron Paul.
I can't swing a dead cat without some politician here in Arizona telling me how libertarian they are.
Yeah, I know. But I think that's at least an improvement, because before they didn't even know what a libertarian was. But you're absolutely right. But I think first you have to get the people saying, well, I am a libertarian.
Then it's over. It's done. All the rest of it I don't care about. Yeah, but then you go and enact it by, you know, voting for the right and running for the right. I go, no. You just declare your independence between the year. I declare mine and be done. Next. You know, I mean, it's an attitude. It's an understanding. All that other stuff is just side effect. Voting side effect. Policy side effect. Special interest side effect. You know, it's a side effect of the people just saying, I break with thee. And there is so much evidence of this that I'm just going, you know, I can see what's... And technologically, we just have so many advances that just put the state in our rear view mirror. In our rear view mirror. No longer are we worried about, you know, maybe we're... food will come from healthy food. What about energy? You know, what about just communication? What about? A young 15-year-old, just a genius, 200 IQ brain box guy's got it all figured out. 10 years from now, we're done. Elon Musk and Jeff Bezos all over the place.
When it comes to investing in precious metals, you need a source you can trust who offers you choices and empowers you to maximize your wealth. That's where Roberts & Roberts Brokerage can help. Roberts & Roberts is a trusted name in precious metals. Since 1977, Roberts & Roberts has been providing you with the finest gold and silver bullion, coins, rounds, and bars at genuine and honest prices. They make it easy to invest in precious metals and work with you to suit your investment needs. In addition to offering gold and silver for sale for U.S. dollars, Roberts & Roberts Brokerage is now accepting Bitcoin in exchange for their quality precious metals products. To speak with a professional from Roberts & Roberts about investing in precious metals, call toll-free 800-874-9760. Write this number down, 800-874-9760. Visit Roberts & Roberts online at rrbi.co. That's rrbi.co. On behalf of Roberts & Roberts, here's hoping your day is as good as gold.
Okay, Ivan, that's where I want to go. I'll throw it to you and, you know, what the youth, now you got them all. We got to do something. They got something. What do they got to do? I mean, where do they go and whatever. The other thing is that Daily Paul Radio is kicked back up, and it's going to have
Peter Schiff and Thomas Woods and myself and some others in different networks kind of going into one place. And that's what I see is where it's going to be coming from. It's just new media that is going to overwhelm. I even got Fox out there now doing their little, you know, going to have a libertarian type show kind of stuff. I see it's saturated with this. They need to bring legitimacy back to the system. And there's Donison, Ivan, authoritarian sociopathy link. You know, the there's the guy Davi Barker from Bitcoin Not Bombs won the 1 ounce gold coin at Porkfest for a presentation that he gave on the only time that government ever acts legitimately is when they seek your legitimacy. If you don't give it to them, you know, it's just I break. That attitude is what creates a better government, because the only answer they have to that, you know, that gives them any more legitimacy is to act more legitimate. You know, but that only happens when nobody respects it. So I'm going, okay, and it uses a bunch of experiments that have been done, you know, the prison experiment and the, you know, shocking everybody, Milgram, you know, experiments, all that kind of stuff. And it's just very interesting, and we're, you know, following that and been publishing a lot of that stuff, and they're doing a new experiment. But the that is where I'm kind of my mindset is. But I want to give you the opportunity, you know, to say, okay, the youth, you want to get engaged, you want to have an impact, you want to do something in 14, 16 and have move the ball forward and do whatever. I'm going to give it to you, and you tell them whatever your opinion is. Would you please?
Okay. Sounds good.
All right. We'll be right back.
And now, live from the studios of Freedom's Phoenix, Ernest Hancock.
Independence declaring kind of guy. How do I do that? Well, I mean, you want to have an impact on your life. You know, you want to do what's best for your children and grandchildren. You want to have some kind of action that's going to be, you know, recognized and used and move that ball forward. You know, and Ivan Elon having worked inside Washington, got his PhD and master's and good in economics and foreign policy and working in Cato. Nope, man, he got all kinds of little initials after his name and kudos and laurels. And he knows. From inside the Beltway, he know what's the influence there. How does it, and that's from his perspective, how is the influence manifested from the people to get things done there? Is it just all show? Is it superficial? Is it kind of, you know, nah, I just go, I break with you. You don't represent me. You know, well, there's some things you might do. What's the most effective things? I mean, help us out here, Ivan. You know, what is it that we need to do, and we can encourage people to have a real impact on their life and how we interact with other countries and people? And I mean, is it a government thing, or we just ignore them? I mean, I know that's probably not your thing, but help us out here. What should we be doing?
Well, I think, you know, basically what we really need to do is to do what Ron Paul did during the Republican debates, and that is bring up stuff that may be embarrassing or, you know, most people don't know about. Like when Rudy Giuliani, as I mentioned, he was saying, well, how evil Iran was and we have to go after him, you know, to pander to pro-Israeli voters during an election year. And Ron Paul said, well, you know, it seems like our history with Iran goes back to when we overthrew a democratically elected government and put in the autocratic Shah, you know, reinstated him. So, you know, people, it's very important to have people who speak honestly about things no matter what is happening or, you know, no matter what their situation is. They're running for president. Ron Paul probably knew he wasn't going to win, but he is a very honest politician. He's probably one of the few. And I think, you know, we now have more libertarian members of Congress than we ever had now. You can monitor whether they're really libertarian or not, but they're certainly more libertarian-leaning than they were. So the libertarian movement has gone forward. And I think the reason it's gone forward is because in Washington, if you want to override the interest groups, you really have to have public awareness. And the more libertarian ideas that people can have out in the hinterlands and the rest of the country is great, because that forces more pressure in Washington. So the place to start is in your own homes and communities by raising awareness. And, you know, it's going to take a while, although some movements, you know, like the progressive movement on the other side, move very rapidly through the country. So libertarianism, I think, could do the same, because if everyone's sick of big government. And I also think libertarians really ought to start speaking to more Democrats, because more Democrats are libertarian than people think.
Now, that's been my experience. Okay, this is one thing. We got T-Day with the NSA. You know, the NSA sending a bullet point discussion thing because they know they're going to get that Ron Paul, you know, 23-and-a-half-year-old kid sitting there going, well, here's your talking points for your discussion on Thanksgiving and Christmas. And I'm going, yep, that's where the battle is, to the point that the NSA knows it. That's where the battle, that's what the, that is where the battle is. It's at the kitchen table. And I'm going, you know, all this other stuff is a side effect of that. I don't give a crap what special, yes, but they're the ones that are in the walls of, you know, the Citadel in Washington discussing with the Congress. Who gives a crap? You know, I never focus there. We use elections. I mean, you know, I'm all about the Lovelution. You know, I'm all about, you know, putting signs up. I vote every time I do, you know, any project activist thing, express myself. That is my vote. And I'm like, you know, I really want to get from you. If there was something you gave these young people, you want to go express yourself. You want to go have some butt whipping aside from the Thanksgiving table. You need to. What? I mean, is it go register, go vote, go work in the Republican Party? Is it, I mean, you know, where do you think from a perspective in Washington, the most impact comes from the people where? I mean, how do they go, oh, did you see? I mean, Dr. Paul's talking about Congress. Man, everywhere I go, I see your signs everywhere. I'm saying, you know, how do you think this influence of them happened? You know, so I'm just going, what is it that, you know, is the most influential? Is it just a check from AIPAC? I mean, you know, what is it? What influences these people?
Well, you might think it's weird that I bring up the progressive movement again, but if you want to model something, you may want to do that, because the progressive was a movement, and of course it had a lot of ill effects, and they were able to get a lot of legislation passed, and of course we probably want to repeal all that legislation, but if you can copy the way that they did it in the early 1900s, they were in both parties. And they didn't go partisan. They rounded up anybody that they could, and they just put a lot of pressure on, the Washington. The first progressive president was Roosevelt, and of course the second one was Woodrow Wilson. They were both disastrous presidents, I would argue, but certainly the progressive movement got their stuff into Washington by being this amorphous movement. And I really don't think – I think the libertarians associate them – too much with Republicans in it. In our two-party system, that sort of like makes you a pariah on the other side. People don't listen to you because you have this R behind your name. And most of the libertarians in Congress are Republicans. But there was a Liberty candidate running in the Democratic primary for Congress in New York City. He was as libertarian as anybody else was. Of course, he didn't win. But, I think you need to support libertarians in both parties and run independent as well in some places if that's advantageous. I think you have to do what you need to win without abandoning the principle, and or at least not, if not win, do well enough to show that you have a constituency out there and that people are.
Well, the Democrats, man, they're our buddies here in Arizona. I mean, they spent $500,000 on an initiative to make sure the libertarians in Arizona can still get on the ballot. The Republicans last minute just passed law, said, nope, you know, libertarians can't get, I mean, it's a stupid law. I can't even believe they passed this, signed it into law, Democrat, no, we need the libertarians up there. Of course you do. So they think they got some congressional seats because of it, and they're confusing us with somebody that cares. Whatever. So we have, you know, on the permaculture this, on the GMO issue, on war, on, you know, so many things. We have, in fact, Charles Goyette and I were on Air America affiliate here for years. You know, we sat there during the Lovelution of 07 and 08. I'm doing a weekend show on the Air America affiliate. You know, I'm just, or the progressive radio station here that was owned by the Dromneys. I'm just going, this is, we understand the left, but I'm telling you, I have abandoned this whole concept of working inside their structure other than to make use of the soapbox. I mean, I run for, you know, Congress and Senate and, you know, Secretary, I mean, on and on and on, and, you know, I'll run. I haven't the last couple elections because I'm done with that. You know, I'm done. You're still voting? You know, but it's a cultural thing that shifts, that changes all of that, and the landscape has changed. And my advocacy is there's something that each one of us can do. I don't say sit on your butt, express yourself.
But to put trust in a government computer on the who's going to wield the trillions and trillions and trillions and hundreds of trillions of dollars, I'm going, gee, I wonder if they would – oh, they wouldn't, you know, mess with the election computers. That would be wrong. I'm like, are you freaking kidding me? So it's a cultural war, and I want to help with that. I would do whatever I can with that, like bring you Ivan Elin, give you some inside look on what influences Washington. And I'm going, the one most important thing you can leave the audience with today is they are most influenced by what? Is it a block of votes? Is it a paycheck? Is it a special? I mean, what influences policy?
Well, votes mainly, and they use money to get the votes because they want to keep getting reelected, and that includes the president, the Congress, you know, and that sort of thing. And so I think, you know, some people say don't vote, but I think if you're ever going to have any interest, that's fine if you want to be purist and pristine out and keeping to principle, I suppose, but it really doesn't affect the political system. So the only way you can do it is to change. Unless you want to overthrow the government with armed force, you have to, you know, you work within the system to get things done. And so I think people should vote and they should get involved.
All right, I'm, you know, it's how do you vote? What is voting anyway? I mean, how do you define voting, Ivan? I mean, you know, by voting, you're what? What are you doing?
Well, I think you're expressing your preference, and if the Libertarian candidate gets a certain amount, then the Republican Party has to start paying attention to it, and so does the Democratic Party, as you mentioned. So you're a factor, you're at least a factor in the debate.
A factor in the
world. Well, it depends on, you know, if people want to have this effect yesterday, but you really have to build it over time, and I think, you know, you need to... bring back a greater reading of history would be better, because that most people think that the government's always existed in this way as this powerful, and of course it didn't up until the early 1900s when we got into all these wars, and you know that expanded domestic government as well as government overseas and military interventions. I mean, war is the biggest cause of big government in world history and in U.S. history, and I think we need to educate the people on what went before and what the founders wanted, and I think that, you know, that's about the only hope you have.
I'm, you know, we went through the end of the show. I'm just letting the archive recording go because I wanted you to finish your thought. But the main thing, I it's not that I'm oblivious to, you know, the politic. I mean, I'm an activist since forever. You know, my wife and I, you know, babies growing up started in 88. I mean, I could see where this was going, and my motivation was that at least people know there was a problem by the time our kids got to be our age. Now we have grandkids. So I'm going, okay, I have, you know, a fifth grandchild on the way. By the time they're of age and start having their own kids, you know, it's, you know, like 20 years, where are we going to be? And it's going to be the result of an advocated philosophy, not a party, not who's wears the ring of power, not who's behind the lever. It's going to be an advocacy of a philosophy of leave me aloneism, and that transcends borders and boundaries and communication lines. And the one thing that I'm finding, I'm 52, I was born in 61, and I can see it's like my generation that grew up, every waking moment that we had any, you know, Vietnam on the television, and it's Watergate, and OPEC, and the oil shortage, and the Cold War, and Afghanistan, the Soviet, blah, 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 blah. My entire life was exposed to the government's a lying sack of killing shit. And I'm going, this is, why would you think I would be, you know, anything else? I mean, how is it that I would have another opinion? And then you have the younger people coming up. Not only do they have that awareness and opinion, it's on steroids with the internet, you know, in perspective and being able to express themselves. So people my age and older, and which I, you know, converse with a great deal. I mean, you know, a lot of them listen to the show. They're of the totally different. Yeah, but we got to get in and you know, be part of and fix it. I'm going, I don't see it that way, Ivan. It's abandoned in their mind. It's over. It's done. It's next. And that's, in fact, that's what the Freedom Summit's going to be about this year, is on, you know, a lot of these people, you know, you probably recognize a lot of the names. Go to freedomsummit.com. And, you know, it's going to be just people going, no, what's next? This will pass. Now what? You know, and I don't want to, we're going to rebuild the, you know, the same mechanism that got us here. I don't think so. So, and it's global. It's a generational thing. The Bitcoin is just an example. I mean, everybody sees, oh, you're for Bitcoin. But I go, no, of course I stack silver. You know, I may do some, you know, transactions in Bitcoin. I understand. But it's the ideology behind it. It's the it's what it represents. A decentralized, you know, democratized, everybody gets a list of hell. It could be a recording of land. I mean, it's just, you know, it's the last hurdle of why we need like a county recorder. I mean, it's over in the minds of the young and the older guys. No matter who I talk to, they keep thinking, yeah, but this Leviathan, we need to be in charge and kind of slow and get on the track and then the engine and slow it and stop it. And kind of, I'm like, why? You know, they're, you know, hell, we're going to, you know, Elon wants to die on Mars, preferably not on impact. You know, I mean, this is, it's totally the technology. Everything is totally different. Will they get bad? Yes, of course they will. Will they use for? Yes. Will they, you know, so I'm not going to be in the street for them to round me up in, you know, orange netting. I mean, I just don't care. I'm ignoring them. And we're trying to sustain ourselves. We do other things where, you know, I got the Aqua Dome thing going and we're slaughtering turkeys for Thanksgiving. And we're just, you know, we're just going to survive. And I see this next generation, the voluntarist mindset, is they're just shifting towards surviving without paying any attention to them.
Hang on one second. I have another call coming in just a second. Hello? Sorry. Okay. I'm back.
Well, do it. Well, I'll let you go. I just wanted to express. I love having you on and getting your perspective. But I'm just thinking, man, there's something else going on out here that doesn't get enough respect. It never did through the Levolution years, and it's still continuing. The new media is rising up. They're just abandoning. We're starting our old newspaper up. We used to do newspapers in the 90s. We're going to start that up again in January because the rural areas, they're doing satellite. I go to these different festivals, and I have all these people come that listen to me on satellite. We're on Roku, on the Next News Network, on television, they're listening. I'm going, this is totally changing. And I saw this in the 90s. It was with shortwave radio. A lot of these programs came up out of that, you know, in the aughts. And I'm going, I see this. I've seen this before. It was shortwave is now satellite. And it's the rural communities that don't have broadband. They don't have enough talk radio. They get enough of their fix or whatever. And they got alternative media and it's saturating in the rural areas. That's why we're going to start up our newspaper again. And if you go
you got to go with the whatever's going, right?
Well, it's Western Libertarian Paper. If you just do a Google search on Western Libertarian Paper, you'll see, you know, like an old PDF. The last one we did was Ron Paul and Lou Rockwell and, you know, Walter Block and, you know, Bumper Hornberger and Bovard and all these guys in 2004. That was our last one before we started doing Freedom's Phoenix. I already know where this goes. We've done it before. So I'm going, okay, we're going to do it again. And we're going to start promoting and pushing the satellite feed. And, you know, blah, 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 blah. It's going to happen from rural and from the young and from guys in the Beltway mentality. They don't understand or see it coming, just like they didn't see the Levolution coming. I'm telling you, Ivan, they don't understand. I think you're kind of in that crowd too. You don't see what's coming, but if you do, you can wield it. You can make use of it. It's the Anthony Gregory types, you know. I can see where this is going, and we're going to be on the leading edge of this thing just to say, Neon, I told you so.
No, I think you're right. You have to do everything from the grassroots and you have to put pressure on Washington, and that's what hasn't been done enough from our perspective. So that's good you're doing that because that's the only way you'll ever change. Otherwise, Washington will just keep doing the same old thing. It'll be, Democrats and Republicans, they're really all the same party. They just collude under the table as they're rhetorically blasting each other. So.
See, I don't see it as a, you know, pressure on Washington. You know, it's like if you put pressure on them, they just push back and they you know, give you bear cats, you know, and they do more selling of armament. The do we fund your and multi-jurisdictional fusion? We're going to whip ass, you know, Department of whatever. And I'm going, no, I don't. It's political judo. I just use their own weight against them. I don't even push. I don't care. You know, we ignore them. We change the people. All the other stuff is a side effect. And it doesn't matter what is sad to me. I mean, it's not even really unexpected, but what was sad to me is no matter how much you can demonstrate it with the Levolution and the voluntarist movement and all the things that sprouted out of that and still going, it means nothing to a lot of, they go, nope. Well, did you get elected? I go, God, man, you guys, you're confusing me with someone that gives a crap. That's not the point. All this other stuff is a side effect of a cultural shift, and it's neon flashing in everybody's face, and then they're, you know, yeah, but how is Rand going to be perceived in the primary of the blah, blah, blah? Who cares? You know, we just don't care. And it's the next generation that are not being served, you know, with this ideology, this manifestation. They go, well, yeah, that's good rhetoric, but what you really need, if you really want to have an impact on what? Washington? I don't care. You know, I'm looking at the Iran. That's why I wanted to have you on. Is, you know, what's the real reason behind that? You know, and I'm going, the real reason is because they can. You give them the mechanism to do it. Well, they do it. Why are they doing it? Because they can. Because they can, you know, make money go their way. Because they can, you know, get their guys in power. Because they can replace this guy with one of the guys that could. Because they can, you know, get them on the central banking kind of whatever. Because they can, you know, and until they can't. And the financial situation, I mean, does that even play into it when the dollar goes? Is it still, you know, Washington? Well, Washington's going to fix. I mean, at some point, people are going to go, who's Washington? I mean, what's a Washington? I mean, is that even on your radar screen?
Well, eventually you'll have an effect on Washington, whether you want to or not, because the pressure will be so great that they'll have to repeal some of the government. And certainly people can live their own way in their own communities and that sort of thing, but they still are affected by the federal government. And the federal government is sort of an oppressive thing. So eventually you probably want to have that be retracted. But the only way you can retract it is to have, you know, have the popular culture move towards that anyway.
Well, we're seeing that, you know, like Detroit. I mean, you got a federal judge, you know, yep, you can go bankrupt. Oh, okay. Well, what's going to stop you? Oh, we got Federal Reserve, just print more. So, I mean, I don't see it as sustainable. And I don't see anyone in Washington, the think tanks, the politicians, the campaigns, or anyone that's addressing the inevitability of what's coming. The only person who even mentions it's Ron Paul. And it's like he's still on the outs. Everybody is dealing with Washington and policy and all that kind of stuff. Yeah, well, you know, Ron got to say that, and we better fix something because, you know, he's right. You know, this is going to – no, it's already done. It's a done – it's Wild E. Coyote off the cliff with a sign that says yikes. I mean, it's over, and nobody's prepping for it. You know, so that's what we're doing because nobody else is. You know, so this is – we're going to keep doing what we're doing, and I'm glad you spent time with me. I'm just surprised that we're still playing Washington, you know, at least the way that we are. It's like voting block versus voting block, and I'm going, that is not how this is going to come out, in my opinion. So I got to express myself.
Well, that's good. What you're doing is good. Keep it – you know, sounds like you're doing some new things, which may resemble what you did before, but you know, any way you can do the grassroots is good.
We just facilitate. Like, well, that's what we did with the Levolution. See, a lot of people didn't even know that we did that. I didn't tell anybody. I just, you know, I was out there busting butt, you know, getting people to just encourage them to express themselves. I tell you, the biggest role that I played, Ivan, was not, you know, coming up with logo or making the signs or any of that kind of stuff. It was going around the country in key places to people, help showing them how to make the signs, making the signs, and being the first one to go with them to put them up on the chain link overpass. That was the biggest hurdle of all the people. They were ingrained with this concept that they had to turn themselves into somebody. They just didn't know to who or for what. You know, they were looking for somebody to get a permission slip from, or, you know, a permit to give a finger to the man, you know, from the man. You know, I'm just going, that was the problem. It was the fear. That's why I have that rejoinder or that opening with Morphia, we're not afraid thing. That's the whole point. They were so afraid, and nobody tries to eliminate the fear. They want to channel it towards some action with inside the envelope that they don't really go outside of, you know, respected norm of how you free yourself kind of crap. You know, well, you don't do that. That would be wrong. You know, I'm just like, so this is it. Once they've gotten over that, which I think a lot of the younger people have, it changes everything. It's every little decision they make. The Bitcoin thing is just a perfect example. A lot of the people, because they don't understand the encryption, you know, and how it works and all that kind of stuff, they get all freaked out. Well, that has no intrinsic value. I mean, you're missing the point. The fact that it doesn't have any intrinsic value and is still worth more than Federal Reserve notes to these guys, what the hell does that tell you about Federal Reserve notes? You know, I'm going, damn, it's just in comparison. Plus, to me, it has value. If I'm willing to give up some silver and gold to have the ability to have an anonymous, quick, easy transaction, well, hell, that is its value, you know. But, you know, that's not the point. It's the philosophy behind it, and it's being ignored. And I'm going to the peril of all the think tanks, all the people in Washington, all the political parties, and no matter how much evidence the next generation give them, they don't care. And think about it. 07 is how long ago? Six years, seven years. You know, this has been, you know, this has been a while. And, you know, all of a sudden, these 13-year-old kids I'm seeing, now they're graduating high school and they're starting to have kids. I saw it at Pork Fest 10 this last summer. You know, for the Free State thing, all of a sudden, I tell you, this is a good example. They would have 30, 40 people standing outside all the time smoking cigarettes or something. This last year, three or four. They all the fried food vendors and everything, gone away. They're doing the juice caboose. They're starting to eat right. They're starting to have children. They stop smoking. They're getting better health. Everybody's, you know, lost a lot of weight. You know, they're emphasizing surviving and what's next and how to raise their family and homeschooling and unschooling. All the things that everybody keeps going to Washington wanting them to do for them, or we're waiting on allow us to whatever, they just have done. They've ignored it. They just live in their life. They're learning how to grow food. They're living out on the farm, day law, whatever the hell. I'm telling you, Ivan, it's already happened, and it's not recognized, and they don't. It'll blindside them. They won't even see it coming, in my opinion.
Yeah, I think that's true. You know, we don't take the government to do that stuff for us. You know, we can do it ourselves. So
done.
I think the young people are doing it. They're rejecting. You know, the way things are going and doing it at their own way.
So, well, they're doing solar power and stuff, not for, you know, environmental reasons as much as, you know, economic reasons. And, you know, you get better battery technology, all of a sudden they're off grid. They got satellite. They just now, we made a big thing out of, we follow space travel exploration, all the stuff that's going on. And for the real reason why, they just launched a satellite that had 28 little satellites in it. Boom, communication network done, one launch. Next. You know, what happens when the internet moves off? They go, oh, we're going to have internet too, and we're going to really crack down on the next. We're on satellite run out of Finland. Bite me. You know, then what? And with their solar, you know, power station of their little thorium reactor, daylog, kiss my ass. It's happening right in front of everybody. And the policymakers, I remember in the early 90s, remember when they were trying to get a standard for modems and stuff, and we need to have, you know, the hardware do a certain, and then the clipper chip and all this other crap. And while they're writing the legislation, the technology already abandoned that, went five steps past it. I'm going, you know, they can't do it fast enough. The market is just so responsive to the people doing what, and they're trying to outlaw, and you can't, and always, and they run up against something like Bitcoin that they can't stop. Hell, they might have created it for all we know. You know, so the thing is that I just wanted to share this with you because you're one of the few people that has the perspective that you do of having worked in Washington. I've been an activist since I was in my 20s in the late 80s, and I've seen the cycles of how this goes, and I see where this goes. And the people in Washington, and the people that think, you know, inside that paradigm, it's going to blindside them. Again, the Lovolution, they did not expect it. They didn't see it coming. They had no idea the impact it was going to have. A 70-something-year-old congressman from Texas, how the hell is that? Boom. Exploded all over, changed the entire paradigm, and they don't understand. They still don't understand why or what it's going to mean later. Is it going to be a different voting bloc? No! It's a cultural shift worldwide, and you can't, no matter what evidence you have, they don't see it. And I'm going, okay. Well, you saw it kind of happen with Syria. Well, I don't think, you know, they're going to get away with another war. You know, the people will just, people go to the streets? Probably not. They'll just abandon them in their head. The other stuff is just a side effect. So I'm like almost, go ahead and invade. Go ahead and drop a bomb. Go ahead and see what happens. So it's just when that abandonment in the mind of an entire new generation, of everybody under 40, under 30, hell, even under 20, you know, that happens, then what? You know, I don't know, but we're going to find out. Well, that's my opinion. Thanks for letting me express myself.
Okay, well, that's good. I mean, I think you're doing good stuff out there. So, you know, keep it up.
Yeah, well, you'll be hearing more. If I have to tell you about the stuff that's coming out of here, then I did it wrong.
Yeah. Well, I became a libertarian actually working in the system, which is unusual. I think most people, you know, become libertarians out in the you know, out in the real world. But so that's my perspective. But anyway, so but I appreciate you having me on your show, and it was fun. So you know, I'm hoping you keep it up, and you know, have a great impact.
Well, hopefully you'll stay in touch with us. There's stuff you think we need to know or do, let us know, and I'll include.
Okay.
You know,
yeah, I'll put you on my. What's your email? Do I have you on my email list of my articles?
Probably. It's a producer at Declare Your Independence. Donna's has it. Mine's publisher at Freedoms with an S, freedomsphoenix.com. Publisher at freedomsphoenix.com. But yeah, you'll keep.
Publisher at
Freedoms. Freedomsphoenix.com. So freedom with an S. But the we put up this article. It's on Freedom's Phoenix today. You know, real reason the Hawks are trying. We put that up today. So we publish a lot of your stuff.
Okay, great. Well, I'll put you on my list to get my article every week. So.
All right. Well, I'll most likely make it up. I appreciate it. Thanks, Ivan.
Okay, thanks a lot.
Bye-bye.
See you later, Ernie. Bye.